This is Freemasonry Today, FMT Magazine, issue number 59 for autumn 2022. FMT Magazine is the official journal of the United Grand Lodge of England. The editor is Donna Hardy. The editorial panel is Michelle Warville, Sean Butler, Guy Roberts, Martin Cherry, and Julian Perry, the culture editor. It's published by Sunday at 207 Union Street, London, SE10LN, on the web at www.wearesunday.com. For the United Grand Lodge of England at Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. The editorial manager is Sean Butler, and the magazine's address is Freemasonry Today, Freemasons Hall, Great Queen Street, London, WC2B5AZ. You can contact for Masonic inquiries on the telephone at 020-7831-9811 and on the web at www.ugle.org.uk. The magazine is copyright the United Grand Lodge of England 2022. The opinions herein are those of the authors or persons interviewed only and do not reflect the views of the United Grand Lodge of England or Sunday. First, a look at the upcoming contents of the magazine, starting on page 3 in a moment with a note from the Grand with a note from the past Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E, Dr. David Staples, welcomes you to the autumn issue. And then out and about section starts on page 6 with provincial and district news, including the 1723 constitutions, plus Bedfordshire's new Scout Hut and the Peter Lowndes Golf Day in Cyprus. The stories section starts on page 40 with the interview. As he prepares to take over as Programme Master of UGLE, Jonathan Spence talks of his hopes for Freemasonry. Driving force, Cumberland and Westmoreland Freemasons take aid to Ukraine, that's on page 44, and Beacons and Brotherhood lighting the Platinum Jubilee Beacon at Freemasons Hall. The A Daily Advancement section has two items, Inventing the Future, Museum of Freemasonry's new exhibition, and Brothers Past, the life of librarian Henry Sadler. The Grand Lodge section has two articles, Quarterly Communication, Pro Grand Master Peter Lowndes looks back at 50 years of Freemasonry, and Solomon, new module, Welcome Companion. The Royal Arch section has an article about the Supreme Grand Chapter, the new Royal Arch Membership and Communications Working Party. And finally, the Culture, Book Reviews and the Community section at the back of the magazine. But we start with the welcome from the past Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E, Dr. David Staples.
Be humble and seize the day were painted on two small decorative rocks given to me by my predecessor, Right Worshipful Brother Willie Shackle, when I took over from him as Grand Secretary 5 years ago. Unbelievably, the time has flown by, and this shall be my last Grand Secretary's and Grand Scribe E's welcome column, having retired gracefully to the back benches. I hope I have lived up to his expectations in both respects. Not for the faint-hearted is a role that combines so many different facets and demands, and as I hand on to my successor, I wish him and the staff at Freemasons Hall the best of luck and my most sincere good wishes for the future. Considering, for a moment, how Freemasonry has evolved over the past 5 years, I wish to extend my thanks to all those who have given so much of themselves to improve the perception of the craft and its administration, and am delighted with the public profile we now enjoy. It's extraordinary to think of how we were portrayed and represented in the media such a short time ago, and how far we have come. Often, so many who contribute to the day-to-day running of the craft, from members of the board, working parties, the staff, and, of course, members in our provinces and districts overseas, do so without thanks or recognition from the wider membership. Freemasonry would be much the poorer without their hard work, and I pay tribute to their efforts on your behalf, without which we would be a much more modest organisation. In May, I was fortunate enough to travel overseas on my final trip as Grand Secretary. It is a constant source of jealousy with my NHS colleagues that my role enabled me to travel and meet so many wonderful people who I might never otherwise have known. Africa was my destination on this occasion, Orange Free State and Zambia. A whistle-stop tour of both districts and a wonderfully warm welcome reminded me that UGLE is a truly global organisation. Remember our international presence and brethren when you are travelling abroad, and if you are able to slip away for an evening, it is always well worth a visit. So rarely is one able to discover a local take on the places we visit, but our districts provide a fabulous wealth of knowledge. Another passion of mine has been the high ceremonial that I have been lucky enough to witness and be a part of. No other Grand Lodge in the world manages ceremonial like UGLE, and again, as I disappear out the door, I thank, on your behalf, the Grand Director of Ceremonies and his team for all that they do at home and abroad to maintain the very high standards for which we are renowned. Despite how easy they make it look, we all know the hard work and time it takes to develop and exhibit such polish, without which we would, again, be the poorer. September marks a very special time in the history of UGLE. How the new Pro Grand Master, Right Worshipful Brother Jonathan Spence, chooses to represent the Most Worshipful Grand Master and lead the craft, and the decisions he makes now, will have wide-reaching effects not only for English Freemasonry, but for the whole craft across the world. I wish him wisdom and patience in the discharge of his important trust, knowing he will conduct himself with skill and integrity. The installation of a new Pro Grand Master marks another chapter in a more than 300-year history of a truly unique institution, and from what I have been privileged to see, especially with regard to the new strategy, this fresh chapter promises to be a fabulously exciting time. Such opportunities are few and far between, and while UGLE will always be there to offer advice and guidance, it is up to you, our members, to carry forward who we are and what we do to the world, and, most importantly, why you enjoy Freemasonry. So, be proud of your Freemasonry, as I am. Be thoughtful of members who need our help, and continue to look after the communities from which we are drawn, as we did so well during the pandemic. May your God go with you in your daily lives, be beside you in times of trouble and hardship. May he look kindly upon your efforts at home and at work, and may he continue to preserve the Queen and the craft. Dr. David Staples, Past Grand Secretary and Grand Scribe E.
The Out and About section starts on page 6 with an article entitled The Power of Three. Although attributed to James Anderson, the 1723 Constitutions was in fact a collaborative effort. Dr. Rick Berman continues his series on the tercentenary of Freemasonry's rulebook and, on page 8, looks at how Freemasons led the charge towards greater enlightenment. Freemasonry's 1723 constitutions are known widely as Anderson's constitutions, but the authorship was not the work of James Anderson alone. George Payne and Jean-Theophilus Desaguiers were closely involved, with Desaguiers held to be the driving force. Born in 1683 near La Rochelle in France to a Huguenot family that fled the country the same year, Desaguiers was brought up in London in relative poverty. He was educated at his father's French school in Islington and subsequently at Bishop Vesey's school in Sutton Coldfield. He was exceptionally bright and in 1705 was admitted to Christ Church, Oxford, as a relatively mature Servitas scholar. At Oxford, Desaguiers read divinity and natural philosophy. His tutor, John Keel, was a fellow of the Royal Society and introduced him to its president, Sir Isaac Newton, and to the Duke of Chandos, one of England's wealthiest men. Newton's sponsorship led to de Sagrillier's election as a fellow, with his fees waived in consideration of his great usefulness to the Royal Society. And in Chandos, de Sagrillier secured a well-connected, wealthy patron. De Sagrillier made his living in part through scientific demonstrations and lectures. Science was starting to reach popular culture, and interest in scientific theories had spread beyond Oxbridge and the Royal Society to coffee houses and taverns. De Sagrillier's experiments and talks entertained as well as informed, demonstrating the effects of electricity, the physical properties of gases, optics, and the orbits of the planets. As a member of the newly formed Grand Lodge and its Grand Master in 1719, he was a pivotal figure in Freemasonry. His Masonic status gave him influence, and he reworked Freemasonry's charges and altered English ritual to bring in new Enlightenment philosophical concepts. He also promoted Masonic benevolence, helped develop a governance structure for Freemasonry, oversaw the introduction of lectures at lodge meetings, and introduced, or as he put it, revived, the ancient toasts at lodge dinners. George Payne was born in Chester in 1685. Although he did not attend university, his younger brother, Thomas, did, matriculating at Christ Church, Oxford, where he knew de Sagrillier. Both were Servitor scholars, both studied divinity, and both were ordained as deacons. Payne moved from Chester to London in around 1711 to take the position of clerk in the leather office in St. Martin's Lane, part of the taxes job, a job obtained through the family connections. His name and address featured in classified advertisements as one of several locations where tickets to de Sagrillier's lectures and copies of his catalogue of experiments could be obtained. The date of the advertisements, 1713, confirms that de Sagrillier and Payne knew each other before de Sagrillier moved to London. Payne was employed in the taxes office for 40 years, eventually becoming secretary to the tax commissioners. He also held several profitable sinecures, some of which were obtained through the patronage of the Duke of Richmond. When it came to Freemasonry, Payne was the second and fourth Grand Master of Grand Lodge in 1718 and 1720, and was subsequently Senior Grand Warden, 1724, and Deputy Grand Master, 1735. He was also the Duke of Richmond's deputy at the Horn Tavern Lodge, No. 4, and in 1749 was master of the influential King's Arms Lodge in the Strand, now the Old King's Arms, No. 28. Payne's commitment to Freemasonry is evident throughout his Masonic career, both inside and outside Grand Lodge, where he sat on key committees and stood in as acting Grand Master in 1735. Payne's death in 1757 generated short obituaries in the press that referred to his years of Crown service, but his principal legacy was his influence in moulding English Freemasonry. James Anderson was born in 1679 in Aberdeen and was ordained into the Church of Scotland in 1707. He moved to London to take up a ministry at the Glasshouse Street congregation at the eastern end of Piccadilly, and thereafter at the Presbyterian Church in nearby Swallow Street in 1710. Anderson is regarded by many as pivotal to the birth of modern Freemasonry. However, it would be wrong to view him as the fulcrum on which Grand Lodge and Freemasonry turned. Anderson was not the sole author of the 1723 constitutions, nor its instigator, nor was he responsible for its most important components. He was, however, the sole author of the 1738 constitutions, but the contents of that book was partly rejected and replaced by a Grand Lodge-approved edition in 1756. The key components of the 1723 constitutions were the charges and general regulations written by de Sagrillier and Payne respectively, Anderson's role was to compile the traditional history of Freemasonry and to serve as a hired pen under Desaguliers' direction and that of the publishers John Senex and John Hooke. The preamble to the 1723 constitutions underlines this. Dedicated to the Duke of Montague and written by Desaguliers, the dedication indicates that the author, Anderson, had compared and made everything agreeable to history and chronology. The absence of any reference to the charges and regulations is significant and emphasises that these were not produced by Anderson. Indeed, the charges are significantly at odds with Anderson's personal religious beliefs, something displayed in the 1738 constitutions. Anderson is identified as the author of this book, almost as an afterthought on page 74, in a line hidden in the middle of the second page of the approbations. This stands in contrast to the co-publishers, Senex and Hooke, whose names appear prominently on the front page, to Desaguliers, who personally signs the dedication, and to Payne, who compiled the general regulations. Had Anderson undertaken a more substantive role, it would have been more conventional for him to receive recognition with his name on the frontispiece and an acknowledgement in the introduction. In fact, according to Anderson's own record, he was instructed by His Grace and Grand Lodge to digest the Gothic constitutions, and a committee was afterwards appointed to examine the manuscript. On the 22nd of March, 1722, after perusal and corrections by the past and current Deputy Grand Masters John Beale and John Desaguliers, and of other learned brethren, the volume was presented to Montague for formal endorsement.
On page 8, Freemasonry and the Age of Reason. The Enlightenment refers in broad terms to a philosophy that emerged in Northern Europe in the late 17th and early 18th century. Its defining characteristics include a belief in reason, personal liberty, and the search for knowledge through scientific method and rational observation. It was, and is, a philosophy sceptical of political, social, and religious diktat, expressed, for example, by absolute monarchy and hereditary aristocracy, and the unwillingness of established religious authorities to face questions, a criticism levelled at the Catholic Church in particular. Enlightenment values embrace religious tolerance, constitutional government, civic responsibility, meritocracy, and the promotion of the societal and personal advantages that flow from courtesy, charity, education, and self-improvement. The Grand Lodge of England adopted and promoted these values, a process that began visibly with the publication of the 1723 Constitutions, with its reworked charges and regulations, and its adoption of a reformulated Masonic ritual. Masonic values are frequently summarized as the three grand principles of brotherly love, relief, and truth. In this context, brotherly love can be considered a shorthand expression for the promotion and practice of consideration for others, that is, for mankind or humanity. Relief is the promotion and practice of benevolence and charity, not simply relieving poverty, but also distress or suffering more generally. And truth refers to education and improving an understanding of both the world and oneself, whereby Freemasons are encouraged to focus on the advantages of education, by which means alone we are rendered fit members of regularly organized society. The 1723 charges, regulation, and ritual lie at the heart of modern Freemasonry. And the intellectual and philosophical ideas expounded in the 18th century embedded Enlightenment principles within the craft. 18th century Freemasonry was also associated closely with education and science. A crossover in membership with the Royal Society and the prominent position of Jean-Theophilus Desaguliers and other leading scientists and fellows of the Royal Society led to some lodges becoming forums for education and debate. Scientific lectures were fashionable at the time and a powerful draw for the aspirational, whether gentry or more middling. Historians have described such lectures as the theatre of the upper classes, although this underplays the role of 18th century science in beginning the process of revolutionising agriculture and industry. Natural philosophers such as de Saguilier, described as arguably the most successful scientific lecturer of the century, applied science to commercial problems and developed ideas to generate income. This was integral to wealth creation and gave momentum to Britain's innovations in agriculture, mining, and its nascent manufacturing industries. But Newtonian science was more than just utilitarian. It also had philosophical dimensions. De Saguilier's success in delivering lectures across Europe represented the ascendancy of Newtonianism with its emphasis on rational scientific observation and a universe governed by comprehensible laws rather than Descartes' innate knowledge and the religious diktat of the established church. And Newtonianism also championed constitutional government over autocracy, something made clear in de Saguilier's allegorical poem The Newtonian System of the World, the Best Model of Government, which begins, "In ancient times, ere bribery began to taint the heart of undesigning man, ere justice yielded to be bought and sold, when senators were made by choice, not gold, ere the cunning were accounted wise, and kings began to see with others' eyes." Although only a small number of early 18th century lodge minutes survive, those that do provide evidence that it was customary in at least some lodges for members, whether hobbyists or professionals, to share their knowledge via lectures in such of the sciences as shall be thought to be most agreeable to the society. An unambiguous example is the lodge at the King's Arms in the Strand, which was renowned for its lectures and for promoting the grand design in a general conversation. The earliest extant minute book covers 1733-56 and records 36 lectures in the decade to 1743. 7 concerned human physiology, some of which included dissections, 6 ethics, 5 architecture, and 3 industrial processes. 9 examined different scientific inventions, techniques, and apparatus, while others explored a broad range of topics from art and history to mathematics. In addition to Martin Clare, a leading educator and mathematician, members of the King's Arms included surgeon William Graham and fellow physicians Edward Hody and James Douglas. All were fellows of the Royal Society. Clare's philosophical approach to education is set out in his Discourse, a speech given to the Quarterly Communication of the Grand Lodge on the 11th of December, 1735. The chief pleasure of society, namely good conversation and the consequent improvements, are rightly presumed to be the principal motive of our first entering into then propagating the craft. We are intimately related to those great and worthy spirits who have ever made it their business and aim to improve themselves and inform mankind. Let us then copy their example, that we may also hope to attain a share in their praise. Other lodges had similar programs. Lectures were held at the Lodge of Friendship meeting at the Shakespeare's Head in Little Marlborough Street, where Clare spoke in 1737. 8 lectures were given the following year, with topics ranging from astronomy to optics, and further lectures in 1739-41. Lectures were also given in the provinces, including at the Nag's Head in Carmarthen, South Wales, the Saracen's Head in Lincoln, and at Warrington's Lodge of Lights.
The next article in the Out and About section is entitled Joining the Scrum. UGLE Deputy Director of Communications Sean Butler was honoured to be present for the consecration of Nomads Rugby Lodge. Early on the morning of 16th of July 2022, a buzz of anticipation was building around Derby Masonic Hall. The day had been months in the planning and was evident by the excited tones of the voices I heard during the short walk up to the Masonic Hall from the main road. We are talking, of course, about the long-awaited consecration of Nomads Rugby Lodge number 10015. Inside the hall that morning, I am reliably informed that rehearsals were underway by 7:30 a.m. as the bacon sizzled on the grill in the vast kitchens below. This was the reward for those braving the warm morning to have one final run-through before kick-off. By 9 a.m, the building was teeming with Freemasons from numerous provinces, each one excited by what was to come. The consecration of a lodge is an historic event, and I am ashamed to say that this was the first I had attended in my 7 years as a Freemason. As we prepared to head into the main temple, there were lots of discussions around the day's events, as well as more than one last curious glance towards phones for the latest score from the New Zealand versus Ireland game. As news of a surprise Irish victory trickled through the assembled Freemasons, we made our way into the lodge room. I cannot speak more highly of the consecration ceremony and the smooth running of the event by all involved, with a special shout-out for Julie Foster in the Derbyshire Provincial Office. I will avoid ruining it for those who haven't had the pleasure of attending a consecration yet, but my advice is simple. See one. Attending the ceremony for the first time was one thing, but watching it delivered by the new Pro Grandmaster made it even more special. The event was like a who's who of Freemasonry, with three provincial grandmasters installed as officers of the lodge. Stephen Varley, Provincial Grandmaster of Derbyshire, in the chair as Worshipful Master, Philip Marshall, Provincial Grandmaster of Nottinghamshire as Junior Warden, and John Lockley, Provincial Grandmaster of Staffordshire as Senior Deacon. For me, the broad representation from across a number of provinces is one of the main draws. Over the course of the day, I enjoyed conversations with members from Essex, West Lancashire, Cheshire, and two from Scotland. Noticeably, the lodge is committed to maintaining the core values of both Freemasonry and the game of rugby union, and this is evident in the lodge room. As the procession headed out of the meeting, a scrum was formed and a ball thrown to the Worshipful Master, with a shout of "Crouch, bind, set!" ringing out from the Director of Ceremonies. The festive board was genuinely one of the best I've attended as a Freemason. Lots of light-hearted banter and laughter was shared by all in attendance, with a fines court set up for those caught drinking with their right hand. It was easy for me as a lefty, but don't mention that to the Worshipful Master. The event was a great opportunity to meet up with friends, including Gavin Jones, who did a sterling job of looking after me. I hope to attend again in the near future. So once again, a huge thank you to Stephen Varley for the invitation and to the province for its hospitality.
On page 12, we shall remember. West Kent Freemasons gathered to dedicate a beautiful garden to the memory of all members who had passed during the pandemic. West Kent Freemasons experienced a day both uplifting and moving in July, as the board of Oakley House, the home of the Oakley Lodge, number 8958, dedicated its new memorial garden to Brothers Lost. There had long been a plan to dedicate the garden to the memory of all brethren who had died for any reason during the COVID pandemic. Sadly, one of those recently departed was Assistant Provincial Grandmaster Daniel Spencer, who had become Managing Director of Oakley House just days before he was called to higher service. It was, therefore, fitting that the board decided to name it the Daniel John Spencer Memorial Garden. The dedication took place with Dan's family in attendance, together with staff members from Oakley House, members of the executive, and other friends. It goes without saying that there were moments of sad reflection for Dan and everyone lost during a dreadful period that was unimaginable to us only 3 years ago. The peaceful, reflective space inspired a happy and relaxed atmosphere, noted more for smiles and laughter than sorrow, and everyone was able to leave looking to a brighter future. Thanks go to the staff at Oakley House for facilitating the event, the members of the board who conceived and implemented the idea, to the Provincial Grand Master, who spoke in a meaningful and touching way, and of course to Dan's family, whose attendance made the day so much more special.
The next article in this section is entitled Memory Lane. At almost 90 years old, Jim Ashton is still committed to Freemasonry after a distinguished 68 years. He takes us through his long and dedicated Masonic service. You might think it's time to slow down your Freemasonry career at almost 90 years old, but not if you're Jim Ashton. This Freemason is soon going to take up the chair as a worshipful master again, following 68 years in the craft. Jim's Freemasonry journey began in 1954 at the age of 21, when he approached his late father and asked to join him as a Freemason. Jim says, "My father told me to hang about as there was something in the offing." What Jim didn't know was that a group of Freemasons, including his father, were forming a new lodge called the London Haven. Created on the 17th of April, 1954, the lodge was made up of London Masons in Dorset and Hampshire who wanted a new home. On the 18th of September that same year, Jim was raised and finally joined his father as a Freemason. "I was the first initiate, as I was a Lewis," says Jim. "In the morning, my father gave away my late sister at her wedding, and in the afternoon, he raised me as a Freemason. He said that he gave away a daughter and gained a brother." Jim recalled a particularly exciting event in his early days as a Freemason during a visit of the provincial Grand Master of Dorset, Lord Llewellyn. As the inner guard couldn't be there that night, Jim was given the nerve-wracking job of announcing the special visitor. "I had to announce him, his name, and all the letters after his name without a card. This I had to learn off pat. Quite daunting for a young Mason." In 1957, Jim married his wife and moved to West Drayton in Middlesex, where he got involved in scouting and Freemasonry, combining the two by joining a new lodge. He joined Pro Juventut in 1975 and became Worshipful Master in 1979, coinciding with his 25th year in the craft. He served there until the lodge's closure. As the years passed, Jim attended a number of scouting events, including a mini-scout jamboree at Chalfont Heights Scout Camp, where he met another scouting Freemason called Barry Barthorpe. "I was in charge of the swimming pool, as he had charge of the other events, including pioneering and shooting," says Jim. "He later asked me to become founder of a new lodge in Staines that formed part of the Feltham Rover crew. Having been a rover in the past, Barry told me that they definitely wanted me with them." This new lodge went on to become the Middlesex St. George Lodge, consecrated in 1989. Jim was given the job of designing the new badge with one other person, but not all went to plan. Jim explains, "The badge had to be changed as we had contravened heraldry, and so it had to be redesigned by the College of Heralds." Former railway worker Jim was the first director of ceremonies of this lodge, and later became Worshipful Master in 2014 as he reached 60 years in the craft. Since becoming a Freemason all those years ago, Jim has been up to all sorts of exciting things, from visiting lodges overseas in Canada to joining a Masonic choir. And while he's had many eventful years in the craft, he's not planning on slowing down any time soon. In 1984, Jim joined the Middlesex Masters, resigning in 1989 to become founder of another new lodge called Middlesex Masters Uxbridge. He will soon become the Worshipful Master of this lodge, having had his promotion postponed due to the pandemic. "I think this is a pretty good selection of my Masonry career since I started way back in 1954, he says. "When I go into the chair, I will be 90 years old and will have been in the craft for 68 years. Can anyone beat that?"
On page 16, Scouts' Honour. In a lasting testament to the generosity of Bedfordshire Freemasons, the Lodge of Friendship Scouts' Accommodation was unveiled by Pro Grand Master Peter Lowndes. The Lodge of Friendship Scouts Accommodation Lodge in Bromham, Bedfordshire, was officially opened on the 26th of May by Pro Grand Master Peter Lowndes. This day was a long time coming. The building was completed just before the first COVID-19 lockdown, which put paid to the plans for a grand opening and handover to the Scouts for more than 2 years. The project began shortly after Tony Henderson was installed as Provincial Grand Master for Bedfordshire in 2016. Tony wanted something to stand as a lasting testament to the values and generosity of Bedfordshire Freemasons, and after discussions with local builder and Freemason Michael Hilson and the local Scouts, the germ of an idea turned to reality. The first sod was cut in July 2019, and just 7 months later, the building was substantially complete. The lodge was funded by more than £520,000 in donations from Bedfordshire Freemasons, and the finished building impresses everyone who visits. Sleeping 48, with modern bathrooms and a large kitchen and dining area, the building will help young people from across the region and across the world to enjoy the facilities of the Leslie Sell Activity Centre. The magnificent stone located outside the main entrance not only commemorates the official opening, but also stands guard over a time capsule containing a selection of Masonic items and documents that will prove a fascinating treasure trove when reopened in a century or so. The official opening may have been long delayed, but Bedfordshire Freemasons can be very proud that their efforts have produced a magnificent facility that will be enjoyed for generations to come, making memories and instilling values that will hopefully inspire Freemasons of the future.
And now in this out and about section, we begin the usual roundup of the other UGLE provinces, starting with number one, Berkshire. Club together. Berkshire Freemasons have just made an unrestricted grant of £9,000 over 3 years to Berkshire charity Me Too Club. The inclusion charity supports children and young people aged 5 to 19 who have additional needs and disabilities, regardless of whether they have yet received a formal diagnosis. Working in the boroughs of Wokingham and Reading, Me Too Club's purpose is to help tackle the loneliness and isolation these children can often feel by assisting them to join in with mainstream sports and leisure activities. Liz McDaniel, Senior Fundraising Development Coordinator with Me Too Club, said, "This funding comes at a really challenging time for us. We have growing waiting lists and increasing demand for our services. That this grant is spread across 3 years enables us to develop our plans with greater certainty. We currently support around 100 children and teenagers, but hope to raise this to 120 next year. This money from the Freemasons of Berkshire will help us to recruit and train the volunteers to turn this into reality." And also in Berkshire, the province of Berkshire hosted the biannual Masonic Charitable Foundation members meeting at the Sindlesham Masonic Centre. The event was attended by around 45 provincial members appointed by provincial Grand Masters to maintain regular contact with the MCF and act as ambassadors for the charity within their province. The meeting was opened by Berkshire Provincial Grand Master Anthony Howlett Bolton, OBE, with presentations delivered by MCF Chairman Sir Paul Williams, OBE, Chief Executive Les Hutchinson, Finance Director Charles Angus, and Operations Director John McCrohan. Attendees also heard from RMBI Care Co. Managing Director Mark Lloyd, who led a tour of the RMBI's soon-to-be-opened new care home, which is set in the grounds of the existing Lord Harris Court.
Number 2. Buckinghamshire. Walk in the Park. Having been treated for prostate cancer 10 years ago, Buckinghamshire member Leo Keat mentioned to his daughter Vanessa that he would like to take part in the March for Men event in London, even though he has walking difficulties. At first, Vanessa wasn't too keen for Leo to participate, but offered to accompany him if he did attempt the walk. On Father's Day weekend, they made their way to the Queen Elizabeth Olympic Park. Leo completed the shorter route of 1.6 miles with the help of his walking stick, rest stops, slices of his 85th birthday cake for energy, and the encouragement of other walkers. He received a medal on completion of the walk, while participants raised more than £16,000 in sponsorship. Well done, Leo.
Number 3. Cambridgeshire. As many as 150 children and young people with cancer will receive help and support thanks to a grant of £74,000 from Cambridgeshire Freemasons to the Young Lives vs Cancer charity. The grant will fund a specialist social worker based at Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge as they provide a tailored package of emotional, practical and financial support to young cancer patients and their families. This will help young people and families overcome the challenges and fears they face during treatment and beyond. Young Lives versus Cancer social workers are there from the point of diagnosis to offer practical advice, whether it's about school, relationships, mental health, or life with cancer in general. The charity supports children and young people across the east of England, including Cambridgeshire, Bedfordshire, Hertfordshire, Essex, Suffolk and Norfolk, who've been diagnosed with cancer and who have been treated at Addenbrookes Hospital in Cambridge. Bradley Wilcox, 22, from Norwich, has been supported by the charity since he was diagnosed with Hodgkin's lymphoma in October 2020. Here's Young Lives versus Cancer social worker Rich was there for him every step of the way to face both the emotional and financial impact of a cancer diagnosis. Bradley said, "Rich was available for me to have text and phone conversations with, and he helped me access grants and other facilities to ensure that all my needs were met. He went above and beyond to take on anything he could to make my experience better. He always made me feel comfortable when asking for help, which is something I've always struggled with." Every year, around 300 children and young people, from newborn babies to those aged up to 25 years, across the east of England, will hear the life-changing news they have cancer. Everything will change for that child or young person. Treatment often starts straight away and can last up to 3 years. It can be a scary and isolating experience for anyone at any age, but for a young person it can have a significant impact on their education, social development and future prospects. Cancer impacts more than just a child's physical health, but their mental health as well. Coping with the news of cancer and dealing with the side effects of treatment, such as feeling exhausted, weight loss or weight gain or losing hair, can have a detrimental effect on their confidence and self-esteem, which we know can lead to mental health issues, including anxiety and depression. There is a financial impact of cancer that families have to cope with too. Many highlight that the additional costs of travel, food and accommodation to attend hospital appointments can cause them further anxiety and financial worry. Julie Miller, head of high-value fundraising at Young Lives versus Cancer, said, "We're very grateful to Cambridgeshire Freemasons for their generous grant, which will make a huge difference to local children and young people with a cancer diagnosis."
Number 4. Cornwall. Serve and protect. Cornish Freemasons will be supporting members of the Armed Forces community after signing a covenant. Very Worshipful Brother Roger Cargeague, JP, the Deputy Provincial Grand Master in charge, accompanied by other serving and military veterans, hosted Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant for Cornwall, Edward Bolitho, OBE, at the Alverton Hotel in Truro on Monday the 20th of June to sign the Armed Forces Covenant. The partnership aims to support members of the armed forces community and ensure they have the same access to government as well as commercial services and products as any other citizen. By signing the Armed Forces Covenant, the Provincial Grand Lodge of Cornwall, like the United Grand Lodge of England, will be able to demonstrate its support to members of the armed forces in a number of areas, including education, family well-being, getting a home, starting a new career, access to healthcare and financial assistance. Cornish Freemasonry, like UGLE, has a long and rich history within the armed forces, with several serving and retired military personnel as members of the 80 Cornish Lodges. So this partnership represents an important step in further supporting both active and retired military personnel. Colonel Edward Bolitho joined the Grenadier Guards in 1978, and later commanded the 1st Battalion in 1993-95, during which time he was appointed OBE. Having been a Deputy Lieutenant for Cornwall since 2008, Colonel Edward Bolitho was appointed Lord Lieutenant for Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly in September 2011, becoming Her Majesty the Queen's personal representative in Cornwall in a role that dates back almost 500 years. After the signing, the Lord Lieutenant said, "I was delighted to be present at the signing of the Armed Forces Covenant by the Provincial Grand Lodge of Cornwall. The Masons in Cornwall already give very generously to a wide range of charities here, and I am delighted that they are now demonstrating their close links to the armed forces as well." Roger, a retired member of the RAF, was in service from 1964 to 1970. Here, he served with V-bomber squadrons in the Police and Security Division, being deployed in Aden as well as the Cold War stations in West Germany and Berlin, finally joining the Photographic Squadron before leaving the RAF. He said, "On behalf of the Freemasons of Cornwall and the Isles of Scilly, I have great pleasure in signing this Armed Forces Covenant. We recognise the work and commitment of our serving members and veterans alike, and vow to continue our support."
Number 5, Cumberland and Westmorland, channeling the craft. Ryan McDowell, a member of Cumbria Lodge number 6643, is swimming the English Channel in support of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons charity, and the Make-A-Wish Foundation. The English Channel is a straight line distance of 21 miles, but due to tides and currents, the actual distance covered during the swim can be up to 30 miles. The challenge is often referred to as the Mount Everest of open water swimming. Ryan is expected to complete the swim within 15 hours. The challenge itself has a strong connection to the craft in that the first person to swim the channel, back in 1875, Captain Matthew Webb, was a Freemason, appropriately a member of the Neptune Lodge No. 22. To support Ryan's fundraising, please visit justgiving.com/RyanMcDowell6643.
Number 6. Derbyshire. Charity Drive. Back in July, 38 intrepid drivers and co-drivers braved the searing heat of a Derbyshire summer day to embark on the second Peaks and Dales Grand Tour. Organised by High Peak Lodge No. 1952 in aid of the Derbyshire 2025 Festival, the tour took place for the first time in 2019, but was unable to run last year because of the pandemic. This year's start was from the picturesque Buxton Cricket Club. Worshipful Master Gareth Stratford was on hand from 8 a.m. to greet the participants as they arrived to register, while Tour Director Worshipful Brother Gareth Flanagan was once again wielding the frying pan and kettle and serving up bacon butties, tea and coffee. The tour is open to all types of cars and motorbikes, and we were treated to a fabulous array this year. The oldest was a 1947 Ford Prefect, which the owner described as his new car, as he had only taken delivery the week before. The newest was a 2020 Honda HR-V, and looked positively space-age next to the Ford. There was just one motorbike this year, a fantastic Harley-Davidson CVO Street Glide, which had an engine bigger than a lot of the cars. As the vehicles climbed out of Buxton, they were treated to spectacular views of the Cheshire Plain and the rolling hills of North Staffordshire. From there, they continued along mainly B roads and eventually finished at Chapel-on-the-Frith Golf Club, where certificates were presented to all who made it. Organisers hope to have raised in excess of £300 for the 2025 festival. Many thanks to all who took part.
Number 7, Devonshire, spreading the word. The Devonshire provincial membership team returned to the Devon County show and were joined by Right Worshipful Brother Ian Kingsbury, provincial grandmaster, Worshipful Brother Charlie Yelland, assistant provincial grandmaster, and Worshipful Brother Colin Gale, provisional assistant provincial grandmaster. Even with the ever unpredictable Devon summer weather, which brought rain and forced the show visitors under cover, the team still spoke to 1,878 members of the public, 2 migrating members, 1 member wishing to return to Freemasonry, and a number of people wanting to understand more about Freemasonry. The Provincial Membership Officer, Worshipful Brother Mark Lewis, would like to thank the team for their hard work. They were Worshipful Brothers Hornibrook, Cotter, Sidwell, Good, Weaver, Boone, Densham and Brother Wallace, along with Worshipful Brothers Jill Henken and Di Dan from the Order of Women's Freemasonry.
Number 8. Dorset. Raise you up. Towards the end of last year, Dorset's provincial Grand Master was approached by the newly formed University Hospitals Dorset NHS charity with a request for assistance on several ongoing projects for 2022. One of these projects was to provide a number of modern flow jack lifting aids to each of the 3 main hospitals covering East Dorset, Bournemouth, Poole and Christchurch, at a cost of £6,353 each, supplementing and eventually replacing the existing lifting aids that were coming to the end of their usefulness. In less than a week, it was agreed that Dorset Freemasonry would step up to the request and fully fund one of the new Flowjack aids. To do this, Dorset's own Masonic charity, Dorset Masonic Care, would fund half of the cost, and the Central Masonic Charitable Foundation would provide the balance from its matched funding budget for Dorset. Both Masonic charities are directly financed by contributions from individual Freemasons. With the funds in place, a new lifting aid was purchased by the NHS charity and is now one of seven devices in daily use at the Royal Bournemouth Hospital, providing much-needed aid and relief to patients who have fallen and who are unable to get up again without assistance.
Now, Durham, number 9. In June, more than 400 Durham Freemasons and members from many other provinces gathered to witness the installation ceremonies of Worshipful Brother John Paul Thompson as Provincial Grand Master and Grand Superintendent. Some 4 years have passed since the Freemasons of the province of Durham witnessed an event of such high importance, emphasised by a packed FED banqueting suite. Both Provincial Grand Chapter and Provincial Grand Lodge were reciprocally opened in due form by the presiding officer, Brother Stephen William Walker, before he graciously handed over to the programme master, Peter Geoffrey Lowndes, to preside over one of his last such investitures in the provinces, having recently announced his retirement this year. Peter went on to preside impeccably over both ceremonies, supported by Charles Hopkinson Woolley, Grand Director of Ceremonies of UGLE. The day also saw Michael Graham appointed as Deputy Provincial Grand Master, having served as Assistant Provincial Grand Master since 2018. Other appointments included the reappointments of Clinton Elliot Leakes, Andrew Moole, and the returning John David Watts as Assistant Provincial Grand Masters, and the appointment of Andrew Peter Fall Foster as Assistant Provincial Grand Master to complete the quartet. It was a fitting day for Stephen William Walker, Deputy Provincial Grand Master, and Gordon Brewis, Assistant Provincial Grand Master, to stand down from their respective positions, having both served the province with distinction. Likewise, in the Royal Arch, Michael Stuart Shaw was reappointed as Deputy Grand Superintendent. David Nigel Hansen was appointed Second Provincial Grand Principal, and Rakesh Bala was reappointed as Third Provincial Grand Principal, with Paul Anthony Lee Hopper standing down as Second Provincial Grand Principal, also having served with distinction. Following his investiture as our Provincial Grand Master and Grand Superintendent, John gave his addresses, each rapturously applauded by members. We congratulate him and look forward to a bright future under his leadership.
Number 10. East Kent. Catch of the day. The second Masonic fishing charity event has taken place at Monk Lakes near Marden, a pretty venue with lots of wildlife, including ducks, geese, swans, and some very noisy frogs. The Masonic Fishing Charity's aim is to bring an interactive fishing and countryside experience to participants from special needs schools and centres and to people who have suffered trauma. Anglers arrived and were welcomed, as always, with bacon rolls, tea and coffee, all under the guidance of Jerry Stupple, while the pegs were selected and tackle prepared, ready for the guest students, teachers and carers. The important briefings and safety precautions were given soon after arrival by Pat Todd, and the students were welcomed by Chairman David Alexander, while Julian Friel allocated the anglers. The fishing was a little tougher than at the first event, but everyone caught something sooner or later. After a burger and hot dog lunch prepared by Ian Gwalter, the MFC welcomed distinguished visitor Richard Wingett, APGM, who offered kind words of encouragement and congratulations to the students as he presented them with their certificates for angling ability and medals, which they were thrilled with.
East Lancashire now, number 11. Senior officers of the province welcomed Right Worshipful Brother Sir David Wootton, Assistant Grand Master, and his colleagues from UGLE to East Lancashire for the Installation Eve dinner in March. The purpose of Sir David's attendance was to officiate at the installation of Brother Robert Frankel as Provincial Grand Master and ME Grand Superintendent for East Lancashire. A splendid evening of camaraderie followed. Once the Deputy Provincial Grand Master in charge, Brother John Farrington, accompanied by other senior officers of the province and our distinguished guests and visitors from other provinces, had been processed in, Provincial Grand Lodge was opened. The Acting Grand Director of Ceremonies was admitted, announcing that the Assistant Grand Master was in attendance and demanded to be admitted. Right Worshipful Brother Sir David Wootton was admitted in due form, accompanied by a retinue of senior officers, and was warmly welcomed by all in attendance. The Assistant Grand Master assumed the chair of King Solomon and appointed his wardens, Right Worshipful Brother Harrison, West Lancashire, and Right Worshipful Brother Blank, Cheshire. The Provincial Grand Master Designate's patent of appointment was presented to the Assistant Grand Master for inspection, who declared it to be in order. A deputation escorted the Provincial Grand Master Designate into Provincial Grand Lodge, consisting of representatives from Zion Menorah Lodge No. 1798, Chainbearer, Anchor and Hope Lodge No. 37, Lodge of Relief No. 42, Fortitude Lodge No. 64, Imperial George Lodge No. 78, Royal Lancashire Lodge No. 116, and Silent Temple Lodge No. 126. Worshipful Brother Robert Frankel was then duly appointed, obligated, invested and installed as the Provincial Grand Master with all due ceremony and circumstance. Right Worshipful Brother Robert Frankel then appointed, obligated, invested and installed Brother John Farrington as the Deputy Provincial Grand Master. He then appointed his Assistant Provincial Grand Masters, Worshipful Brothers John Griffin, Mark Davis, Alan Kerwilliam, Peter Rhodes and Reverend Canon Richard Hawkins, as well as appointing all the other Provincial Grand Officers. Following a drinks reception, a very convivial lunch was taken where everyone enjoyed an excellent meal prior to the opening of Provincial Grand Chapter later that afternoon.
Number 12. Essex. Day Trippers. Freemasons in Essex have made a £15,000 donation to the Castle Point Social Car Scheme, which provides transport options for the elderly and disabled in the borough. The scheme, which launched in 1997, has a fleet of 6 vehicles, 3 minibuses and 3 disability cars, driven by 3 employed drivers and 27 volunteers, along with many more volunteers to help the passengers. The car scheme offers transport and trips for the elderly and disabled in Castle Point for a small membership fee. More than 1,000 residents are currently able to book car journeys at a reduced cost, as well as places on minibuses for day trips around Essex, hospital visits, or even holidays. This allows scheme members to visit beauty spots, shopping centres, garden centres, and more. This is a service the residents of Castle Point say is invaluable, and apart from the small annual membership fee and reduced mileage cost, the car scheme is financed by fundraising and donations. The scheme needs approximately £140,000 a year to provide around 6,500 journeys. Chairman Alan Beale said, "Now the pandemic and restrictions are over, I get a lot of members saying they just want to get out and visit places. This makes this service even more important for their quality of life and mental health." Chris Hicks, the provincial charity steward for Essex Freemasons, said, "This is a good example of Freemasons supporting the community in Essex, particularly the vulnerable." The donation comes from the more than £1 million raised each year by Essex Freemasons. And a second piece for Essex, record-breaking. The province of Essex officially celebrated the conclusion of its 2022 festival in support of the Masonic Charitable Foundation at a summer ball held at the luxurious Fens Banqueting Centre in Bocking. The event was hosted by the Provincial Grand Master and 2022 Festival President, Paul Tarrant, with 400 guests attending, including new MCF President, James Long. The final total of £5,464,563 was confirmed by the MCF Chief Executive, Les Hutchinson, who congratulated the province on its ambitious fundraising. Les said, "During your appeal, you have all worked tirelessly to raise funds for the MCF, to support Freemasons and their families in financial distress. These funds are needed now more than ever as people continue to feel the effects of COVID-19, so I offer my most sincere thanks for your generosity and for continuing to support the appeal during such challenging times." It was also revealed that donations from the members of Essex Masters Lodge, number 3256, set a new festival fundraising record, with members donating a remarkable £108,407.
Now, Gloucestershire. Hundreds of local disabled children and young people will be able to find friends and have fun thanks to a grant of £15,000 to the All Sorts Gloucestershire charity from the Freemasons. The fund is through the Masonic Charitable Foundation. Isolation, accessibility and confidence can be just some of the challenges disabled children and their families face. All Sorts aims to offer a choice of meaningful activities that will help form friendships and equip families with new skills and knowledge. All Sorts is for families who have a child or young person with any additional need up to the age of 25 years. They help those who have life-limiting conditions, neuromuscular disorders, autism and learning disabilities, as well as children who may be awaiting a diagnosis. All Sorts is based in Stroud in the country's first purpose-built toy library and play space. Multiple events take place in the Activity Hub on a daily basis, such as baby and toddler groups, parent and carer support sessions, family fitness sessions, yoga, sensory dance, sensory motor skills, sibling groups, gaming club and the toy library. The Hub provides everyday fun, reduces the social isolation of families who have disabled children, and gives these families an opportunity to try new things. As well as the children themselves, All Sorts also offer support to the wider family, parents and carers, grandparents and siblings. Jane Jones, All Sorts CEO, says, "We're very grateful to Gloucestershire Freemasons for their generous grant, which will allow local disabled children and young people to find friends, have fun and learn new skills and knowledge for the future. The confidence the children develop can last a lifetime."
Number 14. Isle of Man. Passing the baton. The province of the Isle of Man was honoured to take charge of the Queen's baton that travelled the Commonwealth in preparation for the Commonwealth Games. The baton visited all 72 participating nations and territories. On the 15th and 16th of June, the baton visited the Isle of Man, welcomed by Chief Minister Alfred Cannon, MHK. The locations included, among others, Peel Castle, Tynwald Hill, Port Erin and Castle Rushen. At Castle Rushen in Castletown, the ancient Manx capital, the Provincial Grand Lodge of the Isle of Man was truly honoured to be in charge of the relay station to take the baton around the historic castle. The first Masonic lodge on the Isle of Man was a garrison lodge, and with Castle Rushen then being the only garrison on the Isle of Man, it is more than probable that the members would have met here. The story also received coverage on BBC Northwest.
Number 15, Leicestershire and Rutland. After a nearly three-year hiatus, members of three universities' scheme lodges in the province of Leicestershire and Rutland, Wigston Lodge number 3348, University of Leicester, Castle of Leicester number 7767, De Montfort University, and the Lodge of Science and Art number 8429, Loughborough University, were pleased to meet once again for a joint meeting to celebrate the ever-growing success and popularity of the universities' scheme in the province. Since the last joint meeting was at Loughborough Masonic Hall on the 25th of February 2019, this year's was hosted at the beautiful Freemasons Hall in Leicester. The event was attended by more than 80 members who were witness to three wonderful ceremonies, an initiation, a passing and a raising, conducted by each of the lodges with a fantastic group of hard-working and determined candidates. The lodges and the province were honoured to welcome the Assistant Grand Master and President of the University's scheme, Sir David Wootton, along with the Provincial Grand Master, Peter Kinder. Visitors representing other scheme lodges included Bedfordshire, Nottinghamshire, Derbyshire, Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire and Lincolnshire. The meeting was opened by the Acting Master of Wigston Lodge, Andy Green, Assistant Provincial Grand Master. Acting Master of the Lodge of Science and Art, Peter Legg, then took the chair to perform a double raising. Then it was the turn of the Master, Nigel Johnson, and members of the Castle of Leicester Lodge, who then proceeded to conduct a double passing. Finally, the Wigston Lodge conducted an initiation ceremony of a new member, a 25-year-old recent dental graduate. Elliot Conway from the comms team said it was a truly wonderful day and it showed us how far the university's scheme has come and that it truly has a bright future ahead. And a second article, exceeding expectations. Leicestershire and Rutton Freemasons have concluded their 2022 festival in support of the Masonic Charitable Foundation. Members, supported by their families and friends, have taken part in a wide range of innovative fundraising activities during the five-year appeal, most notably the three sportsmen's dinners with cricketers Phil Tufnell, footballer Kevin Keegan and rugby player Brian Moore, which together raised almost £200,000. The festival event was hosted by the Provincial Grand Master, Peter Kinder, and was held at the ground of Leicester Tigers, currently the holders of the Gallagher Premiership Trophy. Assistant Grand Master Sir David Wootton attended as guest of honour, and the MCF was represented by President James Long, trustees Charles Cunnington and Nigel Vaughan, as well as Chief Executive Les Hutchinson, who revealed that the grant total raised was a fantastic £2,022,000.
Number 16. Lincolnshire. Forces for Good. Skegness Freemasons continue to work within the local community to support the contributions being made by the RAF Air Cadets in the town. Members of Lumley Lodge attended a presentation and award ceremony for 1073 Skegness Squadron ATC at the town's Masonic Centre, where the current master, Scott Culburn, presented the Community Merit Award to Olivia Langford. Freemasons gave visitors the chance to see the lodge room, an opportunity eagerly grasped thanks to the broadcast of The Late Late Show with James Corden, which was filmed at the iconic Freemasons Hall in London. Lumley Lodge member Simon Noden said, "We had about 80 parents and cadets at the event. The offer to look behind the doors inside a lodge room was very popular and prompted lots of positive questions about Freemasonry. Many spoke about our charitable work and how we have supported the ATC previously with a cheque donation in 2019 and, most recently, when St Clement Lodge, also in Skegness, made a donation of £1,500. From a PR point of view, I'd say it was as successful as an open day."
Number 17, Middlesex. Readers of Middlesex Provincial Charity News will have seen the Ruislip St Martin's Lodge number 9125 response to the request by local charities for provisions to be sent to Poland to aid Ukrainian refugees. The lodge quickly donated money and the charity steward, worshipful Brother Peter Binsted, and his wife purchased blankets, towels, baby food and medical wipes, which were transported to Poland by a local charity in Wealdstone. As the situation in the Ukraine deteriorated and more people needed help, worshipful Brother Peter decided to raise more money, but this time for medical charity British Ukrainian Aid. Their focus is to provide essential medical aid to the injured, wounded and orphaned children caught up in the war. Peter asked for sponsorship from his lodge to climb the 150-foot rigging of the 19th-century tea clipper Cutty Sark, which is docked at Greenwich. Once again, Ruislip St Martin's stepped up, and with their generous help he managed to raise £1,505 for the charity. On Saturday the 25th of June, Peter made the climb accompanied by his daughter Emma and her husband Dan. Peter said, "The climb was daunting at first, but I soon began to enjoy it. Shuffling out along one of the yardarms was an experience I will never forget, and the view over London and the Thames was spectacular. The high point was the zip wire descent to the ground. I just hope that the generous donations of the members of Ruislip St Martin's can make a difference to the lives of at least some of the people in Ukraine."
Number 18. Norfolk. Acts of Friendship. When members of Lodge of Friendship, number 100, became aware of an urgent appeal by the Pathway Foundation in Great Yarmouth, their charity steward, John Capon, arranged a meeting at the Pathway Mission in Great Yarmouth with project supervisor Jennifer King and the Reverend Canon Simon Ward. Also invited was the head of Norfolk Freemasons, Stephen Allen, and his colleague Michael Musket, MBE. The meeting quickly identified the two areas where the Pathway Foundation required urgent assistance. They needed a new dishwasher to replace the failing original, as well as help to buy a suitable vehicle for the distribution of hot food and advice to the homeless and needy in the local area. The Pathway Foundation provides a vital service to the local area, so Stephen Allen agreed that the appeals should be supported by Freemasons from both Norfolk and Suffolk, who meet at the Royal Assembly Rooms in Great Yarmouth. The replacement dishwasher being the priority, it was quickly sourced and funding immediately made available from the Rotary Lodge of Norfolk and Potter's Holiday Resort at Hopton, both donating £1,000 each from their charity funds. The biggest task was to raise £7,000 for the purchase of the vehicle. This was needed not only to collect food donated by local supermarkets, but to deliver hot food in the area. The appeal request was made to lodges in early January, and following an excellent response, the fantastic total of £7,556 was soon raised, including donations from members' businesses. This enabled the purchase of a van, together with a 3-year warranty, insurance for 12 months, and sign writing on the vehicle. Stephen Allen, Lodge charity stewards and other members, together with the private and business donors, were all in attendance when the van was presented to Jennifer King and the Pathway volunteers. Afterwards, Jennifer and her team were given a tour of the Royal Assembly Rooms. The appeal raised the magnificent sum of £9,556, with gift aid adding a further £111. Sincere thanks must go to all who gave their support.
Number 19, Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire. The Three Pillars Feeding the Homeless charity was presented with the generous donation of £3,000 on behalf of Hotel Chocolat in Peterborough. The founders of the charity, Worshipful Brothers Mick Pescud and Jed Dempsey, were in attendance, and a delighted Jed explained, "This was a complete surprise, and we are so grateful for this donation, which reflects the esteem in which the charity is held by local business. It will be put to a very good use." On behalf of Hotel Chocolat, Tanya Thulborn said, "Thank you so much for all the work you and the team do. Rest assured, we will continue to support you for as long as you need us." And also in Northamptonshire, three Northampton Freemasons have completed an 85-mile walk from Northampton to Grand Lodge to raise money for the 2024 festival in support of the Masonic Charitable Foundation. David Crossley and Mark Hunt of Greyfriars Lodge, number 4990, together with John Lyne of Grand Junction Lodge, number 9775, started at the Boat Inn, Stoke Bruin, and followed the Grand Union Canal towpath, passing through five provinces. The walkers were greeted in London by their partners, also by their Assistant Provincial Grand Master Mark Constant and Provincial Grand Charity Steward Jerry Crawford. The trio enjoyed a well-deserved pint at the cafe and bar at Freemasons Hall. On completing the walk, Mark said, "This has been a great experience, one I would recommend to anyone. Although my feet suffered, it was well worth it. We knew each other well before and worked well as a team. We now know each other far better because of our shared experience on the walk. And finally, in part 19, Northamptonshire and Huntingdonshire, new PGM announced, with more than 460 members in attendance, the installation of Right Worshipful Brother Mark Constant as Provincial Grand Master was an event not to be missed. The ceremony, which took place at Freemasons Hall, the Griggs Centre, Sheaf Close, Northampton, was led by the Provincial Grand Master, the Most Worshipful Brother Peter Lowndes, and saw 12 visiting Provincial Grand Masters in attendance.
Number 20. Northumberland. Blitz Spirit. The Battle of Britain World War II event in June saw the village of Stannington transported back in time to the 1940s after a two-year hiatus. Visitors to the event could get up close to a Spitfire and a Hurricane, and had the chance to explore the Vulcan exhibition loaned by the Solway Aviation Museum. And following in the footsteps of children from Cowgate Primary School, who had been evacuated to Stannington in 1939, visitors had the chance to be evacuated to Lough House Farm on a 1940s-style bus, as well as experience what it would have been like to seek cover in a renovated Anderson shelter during the Blitz. Northumberland Freemasons Community Engagement Team were also in attendance at the event, led by Worshipful Brother Bob Bruce and members of the Order of Women Freemasons. A steady stream of visitors made their way to the exhibition tent, showcasing all that Freemasonry has to offer, with questions answered and myths dispelled. As well as inquiries from potential new members, a number of visitors were found to be lost Freemasons who, after talks with the team, were keen to re-establish their connection with Freemasonry.
21. Nottinghamshire. Raising a smile. Recently, children's A&E play specialist Sophie Betts from Queen's Medical Centre, Nottingham, got in touch with David James, her TLC, that's Teddies for Loving Care, contact from Radcliffe with Hemlock Stone Lodge. She wanted to ask if it would be possible for him to source 3 portable DVD players for attaching to trolleys moving the young patients to such places as X-ray, the plaster room, or even to another hospital. It took David less than a week to get the agreement of other TLC Nottingham trustees to fund the purchase. In fact, 4 players were delivered as an extra one had been donated. Sophie said, "We just want to say thank you for all you do for us as a department. The TLC bears are fabulous for children who are distressed, and to see them smile when they receive a bear is amazing. Thank you for all the other things you have managed to get for the department, including the fish tank and the specialist toys. It means a lot."
Number 22. Somerset. Masterly moves. Presiding over what was his last quarterly communication of Grand Lodge in his capacity as the Pro Grand Master, Most Worshipful Brother Peter Geoffrey Lowndes announced that the new Assistant Grand Master would be Right Worshipful Brother David J. Medlock, Provincial Grand Master for the Province of Somerset. It is expected that Right Worshipful Brother David will be installed as Assistant Grand Master at the next quarterly communication to be held in September. This is a great honour for the Provincial Grand Master and for the province. We'd like to wish Right Worshipful Brother David well in his new role, and to thank him for his dedication and hard work during his tenure as Provincial Grand Master.
Number 23, South Wales. The Duke of Edinburgh's Award Wales, D of E, was delighted to announce that it had received new and continued support from the South Wales Freemasons to give more young people the chance to do their D of E. The generous and significant donation of £6,200 will help D of E Wales deliver its new strategy, Youth Without Limits, which aims to put the D of E at the heart of the national effort to back young people through the challenging years ahead. One of the key projects the funding will help support is to increase the D of E as part of our community development, extending opportunities to take part outside the traditional school setting. D of E Wales's goal is to offer more young people from marginalised backgrounds the chance to do their D of E through centres within their communities. The president of D of E Wales, Captain Sir Norman Lloyd Edwards, said, "I am so delighted that the two organisations with which I have been associated for over 50 years have found common cause. As one brought up in Merthyr Tydfil, I'm aware of the need to support those from a disadvantaged background by undergoing a D of E award to enhance their self-confidence and to experience new challenges and opportunities. I trust that this joint exercise will be a forerunner of many others." D of E Wales Director Steph Price said, "The D of E helps young people to explore who they are, invest in themselves and develop the skills and experience they need to successfully navigate adult life. It is our ambition to grow our reach so that any young person in Wales can access a D of E programme if they want to, and we're extremely grateful for the support received from the South Wales Freemasons, which will help us to reach more marginalised young people and extend our reach into disadvantaged communities across South Wales." Gerald Rowbottom, head of the South Wales Freemasons, said, "We are honoured and delighted to offer additional local support to the D of E in Wales. The D of E's work to expand opportunities across Wales will help support hundreds of young people who are facing many challenges. Small interventions at a young age can make a significant difference to their future and well-being. This local grant follows a previous donation of £300,000 awarded to the D of E nationally by the United Grand Lodge of England in 2022.
Number 24. Surrey. Friends Indeed. In March, the Friends of James Terry Court joined the Friends of Shannon Court for the yearly joint homes lunch. Also attending were members of the executive, members of the Friends Lodge, along with staff from Shannon Court. It was great to see everyone enjoying themselves, as this event was postponed last year due to the pandemic. Thanks go to Trevor Rains for his assistance in the organisation of this event. And a second story for Surrey, having a ball. The annual Masonic Charitable Foundation Ball, hosted this year by the Provincial Grand Lodge of Surrey, saw guests dance the night away at the Chelsea Harbour Hotel in London. The annual gala event has been held annually since 1973 and raised more than £840,000 for the RMBI and the MCF. This year's ball included a cabaret featuring Irish dance troupe Stepping Out and London's top swing and soul band Swing Central. A silent auction, raffle and table magicians added to the evening's entertainment. Speaking to guests following the three-course dinner, Sir Paul Williams, chairman of the MCF, said, "Tonight is all about having fun while supporting and recognising the work of a charity that is helping people across England, Wales and beyond. I'd like to thank everyone, in particular those from the province of Surrey and Ian Chandler, the PGM of Surrey and this year's MCF Bull President, for supporting the event so enthusiastically. Next year, the MCF Bull will be held in Bristol, followed by Lincolnshire in 2024.
Number 25, Warwickshire. The annual church service of the Provincial Grand Lodge of Warwickshire has finally taken place. This was the first occasion that Provincial Grand Master Right Worshipful Brother Philip Hall was able to be escorted to the Collegiate Church of St Mary in Warwick since 2019, the last time the annual service was held. The procession left Alderson House with the newly appointed team of acting provincial grand officers and officers of Grand Lodge walking through Warwick to the church. They were joined by a number of masters of Warwickshire lodges. Demonstrating the inclusive nature of Freemasonry, the heads of other orders were invited to join the procession and attend the service dressed in their own individual regalia, quite a spectacle for the local residents and visiting tourists. The procession joined the assembled Freemasons, their families and friends, for an enjoyable and inspirational service.
Number 26. West Kent. Role of Honour. The province of West Kent has appointed a new Assistant Provincial Grand Master. Congratulations on your appointment, Worshipful Brother David Huntley.
Number 27. Wiltshire. Back in June, Wiltshire's most excellent Grand Superintendent, excellent companion John Reed, and the Provincial Charity Steward, excellent companion Chris Dore, visited Wiltshire Portage in Chippenham to present them with educational resources and toys to help support children with a wide range of needs. The resources and toys were made possible by the proceeds from Children at Christmas pens sold for £2 each. Wiltshire Portage is a registered charity and independent organisation providing a free home visiting specialist educational service for children with special educational needs and disabilities, SEND or SEND. The service reaches more than 100 families across the towns and villages of Wiltshire, excluding Swindon, for children from birth to school entry, operating during term time for 38 weeks a year. They aim to work with families and their young children to provide unique learning opportunities through holistic play and step-by-step individualised programmes to help them develop a quality of life and experience in which they can learn together, play together, participate and be included in their community. Following the visit, excellent companion Chris Dore commented, "What came across was how dedicated and passionate all the staff were in supporting the children they visit."
Number 28. Worcestershire. Hit the road. Kicking off the Queen's Platinum Jubilee celebrations, the Worcestershire chapter of Widow's Sons rode into a party at Worcester's Six Ways Stadium in support of a charity for people with dementia. The chapter is a Freemason biker group that supports the Worcester Warriors Community Trust's work with dementia. As the bikers rode into the stadium, many of the partygoers came to look at the bikes, and the group happily answered questions and chatted with those in attendance. They also presented a cheque on behalf of the chapter. Carol Hart, CEO of the Warriors Community Foundation, said, "The event has been amazing. We have a regular dementia cafe here at Six Ways Stadium every Wednesday from 10:30 a.m. to midday. We just wanted to put on a jubilee event for those that are suffering with and living with dementia, as well as their carers. We have 80 people who attend our cafes on a regular basis, as well as lots of our partners who support the work that we do. For a lot of people, this will be the only jubilee event they will be able to get to throughout the festivities, so it's been lovely to see everybody having such a good time." Andy Philpott, president of the Worcestershire chapter of the Widow's Sons, said, "We are a group of Freemasons, and a large part of what we do is charity. We have chosen the Worcester Warriors Community Trust as our charity of the year, specifically the dementia group. I contacted Carol, and we were able to arrange for us to head down on the bikes, have a chat with people, and let them see the bikes. We have a great collection, lots are Harley Davidson. We're really happy with how it turned out."
Number 29, Yorkshire North East, big day out. The provincial Grand Master, Right Worshipful Brother Geoffrey Gillian, enjoyed an excellent day out at the United Grand Lodge of England, accompanied by more than 80 Freemasons from the provincial Grand Lodge of Yorkshire, North and East Ridings. "The flag was flying as high as the spirit and mood of our members, who enjoyed a superb day out." The programme master received a standing ovation as he made his last address at the quarterly communication in this role. After the meeting and a sumptuous meal at the Freemasons' Arms, the Right Worshipful Provincial Grand Master gave a moving speech as his last provincial day out in London as PGM to rapturous applause.
Number 30. Good Neighbour Lodge. Celebrating 50 years. Good Neighbour Lodge number 8378 has celebrated 50 years since its consecration in Lodge Room 17 at Freemasons Hall. The Good Neighbour Lodge was established to enable residents of the RMBI's care homes to continue their Masonic membership and activities, with lodge meetings usually held in the care homes at a very nominal fee, with their dining already being included. At the time the lodge was created, there were only 4 homes in existence. Today, there are 17, providing the lodge with a variety of venues across England and Wales. In his address to the members, Worshipful Master Les Hutchinson commended the Managing Director Mark Lloyd, who was a guest at the meeting, and the staff of the RMBI Care Company for the way they had coped during the COVID-19 pandemic.
Continuing the out and about section, this next article is entitled Freemasons and Fairways. The annual Peter Lowndes Open Challenge Cup golf tournament teed off to a great success in Cyprus. The District Grand Lodge of Cyprus held the annual Peter Lowndes Open Challenge Cup golf tournament in May at the Aphrodite Hills Golf Club in Paphos, Cyprus. The event was attended by the Most Worshipful, the Program Master Peter Jeffrey Lowndes, and Worshipful Brother Les Hutchinson, CEO of the Masonic Charitable Foundation, together with dignitaries from the British sovereign bases and a large number of Freemasons and guests. Competitors were playing to win the Peter Lowndes Challenge Cup, while there were also prizes for second and third place, as well as for the longest drive and nearest to the pin. The winner was Philip L. Mallion, the fiscal officer of the British Sovereign Bases of Cyprus, a non-Freemason, but watch this space. Peter Lowndes was presented with a special prize by Brother Marios Pantelidis and Worshipful Brother Adnan Nawayed for his continual personal support for the event. The award ceremony was followed by a gourmet buffet at the clubhouse. Through donations, sponsorships and fees from participants, a substantial amount will be donated to SPAVO, S-P-A-V-O, the Association for the Prevention and Handling of Violence in the Family, a non-governmental, non-profit organisation based in Nicosia, Cyprus. Its main aim is to offer help and support to people who face domestic violence and to uphold their rights. The evening before, Peter attended an emergency meeting of the Cyprus Masters Lodge, held in his honour, together with Les, who delivered an eloquent speech about the work and scope of the foundation. The ceremony was followed by the customary festive board, where Peter was presented with an engraved silver bowl by the District Grand Master of Cyprus to mark the personal help freely given to Cyprus and to the District Grand Master Michael Costa Hagikonstantas. Peter responded with a few well-chosen words. Michael then presented Les with a silver plaque in appreciation of his time and energy in launching the Masonic Charity Foundation Relief Chest of Cyprus. In his response, Les mentioned that it was a suitable gift as today was his silver wedding anniversary. He also stated that in promoting Teddies for Loving Care, the visit to Cyprus was the first trip of the travelling bear to another country. It's intended that the bear will visit around the world promoting the initiative. The 2023 Peter Lowndes Challenge Open Challenge Cup tournament will be held on the 28th of May 2023, where organisers expect an even larger turnout. Now we begin the stories section, and there are three articles. First, the interview with Jonathan Spence. And then Driving Force, Cumberland and Westmoreland Freemasons take aid to Ukraine, and Beacons and Brotherhood lighting the Platinum Jubilee Beacon at Freemasons Hall.
On page 41, Pro Grand Master Plan. As he gears up to take over as Pro Grand Master, Jonathan Spence reveals the introduction of a new 7-year roadmap for Freemasonry and discusses the importance of building a thriving membership. When he isn't preparing for his new role as Pro Grand Master, attending one of no fewer than 14 lodges, or managing the investment portfolio of a Cambridge college, Jonathan Spence likes to spend his weekends refereeing rugby matches. His approach, he reveals, is to be as low-key and unobtrusive as possible, get the big calls right, but otherwise stay out of the way so the game can flow. It's a style he'll have to adapt rather than adopt outright when he replaces Peter Lowndes as Pro Grand Master in September, because as well as maintaining official duties as the Grand Master's official representative, Jonathan will be arriving in time to oversee the introduction of a new 7-year strategic roadmap for the craft and Royal Arch, something he believes will require him to lead by very visible example. The roadmap needs to be implemented in thousands of lodges and chapters, says Jonathan from the Pro Grand Master's panelled office at Freemasons Hall. I will be involved in helping send the message to the membership that it is very important we get this right. The Grand Master has always set the best example, and now it's on all of us, provincial and district Grand Masters and Grand Superintendents, deputies, all their executives, all Grand Officers, and every single member down to the newest entered apprentice. We all have a role to play in taking us through 2022 and beyond. Our mission is to make sure we are a thriving organisation, one that people are willing to be part of, and one in which those who join are willing to participate. Jonathan has certainly thrived as a Freemason. He joined at the first possible opportunity when an invitation to apply to his old school lodge in Rochester arrived in the post along with cards for his 21st birthday. He was initiated just short of his 22nd birthday and is now a member of more than a dozen lodges, including in Cambridge, where he works as bursar of Queen's College, and Oxford, where he studied theology. The bulk of Jonathan's career was spent in the city, where he rose to become chief executive of Singer and Friedlander Limited. He resigned that role in 2006 when the bank was bought by Icelandic bank Kaupthing, an acquisition that ended in disaster when the firm went into administration in 2008 and several Icelandic directors were jailed. "It was very clear to me that it was not going to end well," he recalls. "I did my duty and told the regulators it was not going to go well and then resigned. People sometimes ask what Freemasonry has done for me, and I say it has helped me to understand that you must try to do what is right, even in challenging circumstances." This was a practical application. In return, Jonathan has brought some of the skills he developed in the city to Freemasonry. One of his first tasks upon appointment in 2009 as Deputy Grand Master, after 6 years as Grand Director of Ceremonies, was to oversee the amalgamation of the four Masonic charities into a single charity, something he describes as the toughest corporate finance deal I have ever done. It took 7 years and a lot of hard work, but the restructuring had tangible benefits for Freemasonry and the wider community. "It had to be done," he says. "There was a lot of duplication. I looked at it completely cold and could see it wasn't sustainable and was leaving gaps in provision and support." Alongside these core skills come city-tuned concepts about leadership that Jonathan feels can be applied to Freemasonry. He talks about the importance of adopting good practice rather than best practice, because best implies there is no room for improvement, while good leaves the possibility of continuous development. He also talks about a yes-if rather than a no-because approach, an essential asset if Freemasonry is to thrive. He cites an example, that of exploring the feasibility of conducting occasional quarterly communication or grand chapter meetings outside London to make life easier for people coming from more distant provinces. This was considered almost 30 years ago, but he wants to see if it will work now. That's the yes-if rather than no-because approach in a nutshell, he explains. Jonathan chaired the strategy group that created the 7-year roadmap, which focuses on the importance of building a thriving membership. That means attracting new Freemasons and ensuring existing members are happy and fulfilled, creating an organisation that everybody wants to be a part of. In Freemasonry, people hesitate to use the word fun, but people join for one of 20 or more different reasons, he says. All of them are valid and there is no sole reason they join, but they do have to enjoy it. The strategy will incorporate the Royal Arch alongside Craft with an oversight committee to monitor progress. Jonathan will assume the role of pro-first grand principal as well as pro-grand master and emphasises the importance of the Royal Arch within UGLE. The Craft and Royal Arch need to work seamlessly together. We must get better at explaining why the Royal Arch enriches the Craft experience of members, how valuable it is, and how it is the natural next stage after becoming a Master Mason. Although he is looking forward to his new role, Jonathan takes care to pay tribute to his predecessor. "I am nervous, because Peter is an extraordinary act to follow. But when I have succeeded him in roles, he is brilliant at letting me do it in my own way," he says. "Whenever I am asked to do something, I try to do it to the best of my ability. Otherwise, it is disrespectful to the person who asks, and disrespectful to yourself. In my working life, I always wanted to be in a role where I can make a difference, and it's the same whether it's Freemasonry, the parish, or the rugby club. That is what motivates me. With Freemasonry, it's the camaraderie and the feeling you can make a positive difference.
Page 44, and the next article, is entitled Freemasons on a Mission. In the spirit of helping those in urgent need, a group of Cumbrian Freemasons set off in two vans to transport crucial supplies to war-torn Ukraine. One of them, Neil Dixon, tells us about their incredible journey. When Russia invaded Ukraine in February 2022, individuals and organizations all over Europe wanted to help a country and population that had been thrust into a war zone. These included Grand Lodge, which made an immediate £50,000 donation to the British Red Cross and went on to raise a further £500,000 for refugee charities. However, in the far northwest of England, a group of Freemasons decided to do their own bit, driving two vans of supplies from Carlisle to the Ukraine border, a distance of some 1,500 miles. It's a reminder that charity isn't always about writing a cheque. Donating time, effort and skills is an important part of being a Freemason. We were directly helping a community in need, says Neil Dixon, one of five Freemasons from four of the East Lakes group of lodges to make the journey. This was aid going straight to people. It wasn't sitting in a warehouse waiting to be processed. We were handing it over directly in a war zone. We felt we were doing what Freemasons do best, and that's helping others who are less fortunate than ourselves. To think that people from this small province in Cumbria could do something to help a community in Kyiv meant everything to us. The initial impetus came from Paul Proctor, a Freemason who started collecting items in Penrith to donate to Ukraine. Other Freemasons came on board, including Neil, Richard Graham, Grant Todd, Alan Morley and Peter Terry. The wider community was eager to help as well, and before long, families, schools and businesses were all pitching in. That's when the idea of driving to Poland took hold. One of Richard's neighbours was Nadia Liuk, a Ukrainian who'd lived in Carlisle for 19 years. Nadia knew people in Kyiv who were living in tents, surviving bombs, pests and freezing temperatures without access to food, warm clothes or basic medicine. Through talking to Nadia, the Freemasons were able to make direct contact with a community in Ukraine that was in need of aid. On the 2nd of April, the two vans set off, with driving shared by five Freemasons, Neil, Paul, Richard, Grant and Alan. We planned to have six, but Peter had to drop out and instead went a few weeks later, says Neil. Very sadly, he passed away in May. We drove two big vans packed with warm clothes and basic medical equipment such as bandages, toiletries and non-perishable food. These were all items that the people in Ukraine had specifically requested or said they needed, so we didn't just fill a van with stuff that was useless to them. After driving to Newcastle, the group took an overnight ferry to Amsterdam. The following morning, they began the long drive across the Netherlands and Germany and into Poland. The convoy was decorated with the Ukrainian flag and the emblem of Cumbrian Freemasons and received a positive reception at passport control as well as from other motorists and pedestrians as they continued through Europe. The Freemasons weren't the only group taking aid from the UK. At one point they passed a convoy of British Army vehicles 7 or 8 miles long delivering military support to Ukraine. Their contact in Ukraine was Sergei, who crossed the border at Lviv to meet them. In his own journey across the country, Sergei had been accompanied by a younger man who was not allowed to cross the border as he was of fighting age. It was a reminder of the reality of the war, as was the news that at the border they were only about 20 miles from where bombing was taking place, roughly the distance between Carlisle and Penrith, as Neil puts it. We talked to Sergei and made a video, says Neil. He was very grateful, extremely upbeat and determined, saying, "We will fight and we will win." It reminded us that the Ukrainians were fighting for their lives and that we were helping them, even just that little bit. The aid was delivered and stored in a church in Kyiv, and we were sent pictures of the destination and it being unloaded. A girl from a primary school in St. Bees, Cumbria, had made a box with supplies, including toothpaste, toothbrush and toiletries, and this actually got handed to a Ukrainian soldier in Kyiv. Amazing! After a cup of tea at the border, the Freemasons got back in their vans and set out on the route they'd come. This time, they did at least stop for the night outside Berlin, the first beds they'd slept in for 44 hours. When they got on the ferry, they discovered their barman was Ukrainian. He kept thanking all of us. He was so appreciative of what we had done for his country, says Neil. The group's social media updates received a fair bit of attention, including an interview recorded at the Polish border with Capital Radio in Manchester. Recognition also came from within Freemasonry, with their provincial Grand Master Bill Bewley offering the group a commendation for their efforts. For Neil, it's all part of being a Freemason. The core principles of Freemasonry are friendship, integrity, respect and charity, and we showcased all of those aspects, he said. We got the community involved, we collected the aid Ukraine needed and then delivered it personally to the people. This is one of the reasons I like Freemasonry. Those core values are amazing and help you through life. The team are talking about another trip to deliver aid, but also have plans to support Ukraine when the war finally ends. Sergei invited us back in for a beer when the war is over, but we thought it would be good to go back and help them rebuild, says Neil. Maybe we could tie that in with a visit to the Ukrainian Grand Lodge. That would be a fantastic way to close the loop. This was a bonding experience. We were friends before this, but we now shared something that will last forever.
On page 48, the royal treatment. In this historic year of Queen Elizabeth II's reign, Freemasons around the UK honoured her Platinum Jubilee with a series of special events. The UK celebrated a unique milestone on the 2nd of June, Her Majesty the Queen's 70th year as the country's monarch and head of the Commonwealth. The Platinum Jubilee is a feat no previous British monarch has achieved. In recognition of her long service, more than 2,022 beacons were lit throughout the UK, Channel Islands, Isle of Man, and UK overseas territories, plus one in each of the capital cities of Commonwealth countries. The beacons enabled local communities, individuals and organisations to pay tribute to her as part of the official Platinum Jubilee celebrations taking place up and down the country from the 2nd to the 5th of June. The United Grand Lodge of England was delighted to be taking part, lighting a special Platinum Jubilee beacon on the roof of Freemasons Hall at 9:45 p.m. on the 2nd of June. Earlier that day, town criers were invited to undertake a proclamation announcing the lighting of the beacons later that evening. UGLE was also a key corporate sponsor of the official Platinum Jubilee pageant commemorative album, a limited edition publication that included 4 pages on Freemasonry and its strong connection to royalty. It was presented as a gift to all VIP and senior guests during the pageant and was also on sale to the public over the weekend through a national newspaper. In addition, complimentary copies were made available to members of the House of Commons and the House of Lords, special advisers, researchers and staff across Westminster and Whitehall, government agencies and members of the European and Commonwealth Parliaments, plus universities, colleges and schools across the UK and Commonwealth. Several provinces planned special events to commemorate the Jubilee. In West Kent, members joined the Order of Women Freemasons at the festivities in Tunbridge Wells, which included a colourful carnival and ran a Jubilee celebration and information stall. In Somerset, Freemasons celebrated with charitable dinners, while Devonshire Freemasons held a tea party. A celebratory cream tea was also the order of the day at Dorset Freemasons in Poole Masonic Hall. Elsewhere, Freemasons in Essex helped a local primary school to celebrate by donating numerous prizes and art sets for winners of a competition to create something regal or royal. Meanwhile, in Hampshire and the Isle of Wight, Freemasons organised a dinner featuring the Royal Marines Association concert band. Further north, Durham Freemasons enjoyed beacon lighting events in 4 different areas: Wingate, Bear Park, Chopwell and Weardale. Cumbria and Westmorland also lit beacons across the province. Ian Chandler, chair of UGLE's Communications and Marketing Working Party, said, "It's a great honour to take part in the Platinum Jubilee. Freemasonry has always had a strong relationship with the royal family. We are delighted that our members and communities were excited about taking part, and it was great seeing them getting involved, showing the nation just how proud we are of Her Majesty the Queen."
This next section is a daily advancement, extending knowledge of Freemasonry, and we have two articles in this section. First, Inventing the Future, Museum of Freemasonry's new exhibition, and second, Brothers Past, the life of librarian Henry Sadler. Now, Freemasons throughout the world are celebrating the tercentenary of a very important book next year, The Constitutions of the Freemasons. Museum of Freemasonry librarian Martin Cherry explains more. Published in 1723, The Constitutions of the Freemasons, that's two words, Free-Masons, took Freemasonry to the world and will feature in a major exhibition hosted by the Museum of Freemasonry for Grand Lodge. Inventing the Future will showcase how the growth of Freemasonry in the 18th century spread Enlightenment ideas of equality, democracy and scientific reason. The Constitutions was the work of Presbyterian priest James Anderson and scientific publishers Senex and Hooke, essentially a rule book for the new Grand Lodge of England. It was actually much more. The book includes a lengthy history of Freemasonry derived from the legends of ancient stonemasons and a set of charges forming Freemasonry's moral framework. A collection of bawdy songs appropriate for lodges that largely met in taverns and coffee houses rounds it off. Reprints and translations of Anderson's books soon appeared across the rest of Europe and further afield, helping to make Freemasonry the global phenomenon it is today. A Dublin edition of the Constitutions appeared in 1730, 5 years after the Grand Lodge of Ireland was founded. It includes an almost identical frontispiece to John Pine's work for Anderson. The first foreign language edition is an undated Dutch translation made by Johan Koenen. It's probably published around 1736, just after the creation of the Grand Lodge of the Netherlands, based in liberal publishing hotspot The Hague. Deputy Grand Master Koenen also released the first French and German versions in 1736 and 1741, respectively. French and German editions appear throughout the 18th century. French Protestant Marquis Louis-François de Lathiers promised Anderson a French edition after his initiation in England. He completed the translation by 1733 and, from 1742, published several French versions in Frankfurt, where he had started a lodge. He was unsatisfied by Anderson's history, especially in the 1738 second edition, and so had rewritten it in a style more palatable to European audiences. One of his editions was an oration written by a Jacobite exile, the Chevalier Michael Ramsay. This linked Freemasonry to medieval chivalric orders and led to the formation of some of the additional degrees in Freemasonry. In North America, English Freemasonry was established in the 1730s. Lodges met predominantly in New England and Pennsylvania, where Benjamin Franklin was elected provincial Grand Master in 1734. At this point, Franklin, a founding father of the United States, was a successful publisher and printer. In this capacity, he published America's first Masonic book, a reprint of Anderson's Constitutions. He sold 127 copies, of which only 17 survive. Of the two volumes in the collection of the Museum of Freemasonry, one can be traced back to Luke Vardy, keeper of the Royal Exchange Tavern in Boston, who purchased it from Franklin in 1734. Vardy later gave it to Henry Price, who was 4 times Provincial Grand Master of New England. Franklin's Constitutions is a word-for-word reprint of Anderson, but includes an additional song which he may have written. Franklin became one of the most influential figures in American history. He represented the colonies in Paris during the War of Independence, drafted the Declaration of Independence, and was a delegate at debates to ratify the Constitution of the United States. By the early 19th century, editions of the constitutions were published in Europe, the Americas, and Asia. Even the Royal Antients Grand Lodge of England based its rulebook on Anderson's work. A Human Reason, published in 1756, was drafted around a pirated Irish edition. The only exception was Scotland, where the Grand Lodge was created in 1736. It was not until 1836 that a first Scottish constitutions appeared, a very dry affair with no history and no songs.
On page 54, The Librarian, Dr. Rick Berman examines the life of librarian and QC Lodge member Henry Sadler, and explains why he was wrong about his views on the rivalry between the ancients and moderns. In 1887, Henry Sadler, 1840 to 1911, the Grand Tyler of Grand Lodge, was appointed sub-librarian of the then relatively new Library and Museum. In that role, he was instrumental in bringing about a major expansion, extending its opening hours and collecting, organizing, and indexing a vast array of archival material. The latter provided the basis for his research and that of many other members of Quatuor Coronati Lodge No. 2076, the first and premier lodge of Masonic research. Indeed, Robert Freck Gould, the prolific Victorian Masonic historian and a fellow member of QC, said of Sadler that scarcely a single Masonic book would have been written without the author being assisted by him. The formation of QC Lodge, consecrated in 1886, and the growth in Masonic research encouraged by Sadler's work, increased the importance of the library and museum, and lists of donations and acquisitions begin to appear in Grand Lodge's quarterly communication from 1893. Partly as an acknowledgement of the major contribution he had made, when Sadler retired as Grand Tyler in 1910, he was appointed librarian and curator on a full-time basis with an annual salary of £150. Unfortunately, the appointment was to be brief. He died just a year later. Sadler is perhaps best known today for his comments on the rival Ancients and Moderns Grand Lodges, and, in particular, for his statement that there was no schism between the two organizations before they agreed to unite in 1813. His remarks became received wisdom, and were echoed not only by his peers, but also by many later Masonic historians. Sadler's assessment of Ancients Freemasonry focused, rightly, on the influence of the majority Irish faction, the expatriate Irish who had fled famine to seek new economic opportunities in Britain, and who in the 1750s and 60s made up the largest component of the Ancients members. However, differences in Masonic ritual, although later magnified by both Moderns and Ancients Grand Lodges, were in fact relatively minimal. Sadler's cornerstone argument, his key point, was that since the expatriate and especially London Irish had not been members of English lodges, the rivalry between the two organizations and their respective members could not be termed a schism. His argument was essentially this, that one cannot leave an organization of which one has not been a member. And it was given additional weight in the 1950s when J.R. Dashwood, another member of QC Lodge, editing the Ancients Grand Lodge Minutes, added a legalistic underpinning by observing that the situation could not have been otherwise since no exclusive Masonic territorial jurisdiction had been formulated at the time. However, despite its widespread acceptance, Sadler's assessment jars with both contemporary evidence and primary source material. Moderns Freemasons did leave to join the Ancients. Some had found themselves de facto rejects from the Grand Lodge of England following the expulsion or suspension of around a quarter of London's lodges in the decade to 1750. Some Ancients Freemasons also chose to join the Moderns. One example is William Preston, after whom the Prestonian lectures are named. Somewhat ironically, having joined the Moderns, Preston subsequently led a breakaway group from the Lodge of Antiquity and formed yet another rival Grand Lodge, the Grand Lodge of England south of the River Trent. As an aside, Preston was later welcomed back to the Grand Lodge of England, and in 1790 the Lodge of Antiquity was reunited. The two rival Ancients and Moderns Grand Lodges fought a running battle in the press and in Masonic pamphlets, as well as in the forewords that preambled across successive editions of Ahemon Raison, the Ancients' Constitutions. What was a real and intense Masonic schism deepened as the 18th century progressed, with both Moderns and Ancients Grand Lodges adamant that anyone who joined their respective rival would be sanctioned. Indeed, the Ancients wrote in their Grand Lodge minutes on the 1st of June 1774 that, "If any lodge under the ancient constitution of England shall have in their positions any authority from the Grand Lodge of Moderns, or in any manner assemble or meet under such authority, they shall be deemed unworthy of associating with the members of the ancient community, and the warrant they hold under this right worshipful Grand Lodge shall be immediately cancelled." Another factor ignored by Sadler was that many expatriate Irish were prevented or dissuaded from joining English lodges. This was a function of two factors: a fear that the influx of Irish emigres would overwhelm lodge charities, and the dissemination by the English press of a highly negative Irish stereotype, a view that echoed within the establishment and within parts of English Freemasonry. Anti-Irish and anti-Catholic prejudice was rampant in 18th century England, ranging from legal discrimination to periodic mob violence, such as the 1736 Spitalfields riots against competition from cheaper Irish labour. The institutional bias against the Irish in England was such that by the 1750s and 60s, anti-Irish bigotry was endemic. It can be seen especially in the courts, where a disproportionate number of Irish men and women were arrested, and when convicted were handed sentences far harsher than those received by the English, Welsh, or Scots. The bigotry and the divisions it created were ignored by Sadler, but we are driven to ask why this was the case when the evidence was so compelling. There are several potential explanations. First, although Sadler was writing towards the end of the 19th century, the 1813 union between the Ancients and Moderns Grand Lodges and the more socially inclusive Freemasonry that followed was relatively recent, and not all Masonic tensions had been fully resolved. Second, institutional bigotry against Ireland had persisted, and although many were seeking to establish a more mature political relationship, the question of Irish home rule remained extremely delicate. In that respect, Sadler may have had an understandable desire not to provoke a debate that may have soured Anglo-Irish Masonic relations. And third, issues of Masonic unity, and their absence, were to the fore in the 1880s. An argument over the specific nature of the oath taken in Lodge had divided international Freemasonry, with a large part of the English-speaking Masonic world, including UGLE, the Grand Lodges of Ireland and Scotland, and Grand Lodges in the United States, ranged against the Grand Orients of Europe and Latin America. Sadler's argument that there was no schism between Ancients and Moderns was probably incorrect even in the terms in which he framed the question, and it is certainly incorrect when 18th century English Freemasonry is examined holistically. However, his comment does allow us to reflect that history is not only a function of the interpretation of data, but also of each historian.
Now we come to page 57 and the Grand Lodge section of the magazine, News from Great Queen Street. Two articles. First of all, quarterly communication, Programme Master Peter Lowndes on 50 years of Freemasonry. And secondly, Welcome Companion, the last in the series of Solomon's virtual learning modules. Golden Opportunities. As he approaches retirement, pro-Grandmaster Peter Lowndes reflects on an extraordinary 50 years of Freemasonry in his June address. Brethren, I can't tell you what a privilege it has been to be a member of this wonderful institution for 50 years, let alone serving as pro-Grandmaster for more than 13 years. I had no idea what I was letting myself in for when accepting the appointment of Deputy Grand Director of Ceremonies, GDC, back in 1983, but if I had done, I wouldn't have changed a single thing. When I was appointed GDC in 1995, I thought that was the pinnacle of my Masonic career, and I would still say that it's the best job there is, as everyone has to do what you tell them. When I retired as GDC in 2002, I expected a nice, quiet role on the back benches and had no idea that Lord Northampton was intending for me to take over from Ian Bryce as Deputy Grand Master. I was even more flabbergasted when he asked me, or told me, actually, to take over from him, not least because I had no idea he was intending to step down himself. The past 13 years have been a marvellous experience, and I could not have hoped for everyone to be so kind, generous and supportive wherever I have visited. During my time in various offices, I have been to every province and genuinely couldn't say which one I enjoyed the most. They have all been wonderful, and I can't thank the provincial Grand Masters and Grand Superintendents enough for their support and courtesy. I don't need to know what they said behind my back. I've been also to 21 of our 32 districts, as well as 2 of our 4 inspectorates, and have been so impressed by the pride they all show in being part of UGLE. They have all have competition from other constitutions, mainly Ireland and Scotland, but also in a few other places, such as the Netherlands. Many also have grand lodges of the country in which they reside, often formed by us or other home grand lodges. I like to think that in recent times, our relationship with those Grand Lodges has been very cordial, for example, the Grand Lodge of India. My main job is to represent the Grand Master when he is unable to be present, and that includes visiting Grand Lodges overseas. It's been fascinating to carry out these visits and see the different ways they perform their ceremonies, and to see the different regalias that are in use. I believe I've been to more than 20 other Grand Lodges. Many visit us on a regular basis, and I like to think that I have made many friends around the world, and most particularly in Europe. Brethren, I hope we are all hugely proud of our record of charitable giving, which has always been in our DNA. Whether it's financial assistance or voluntary work matters not. We're just good at it. However, the highlight of my time as Pro Grand Master was clearly the tercentenary year when our provinces and districts got up to some wonderful antics for the purpose of raising charitable funds, and also found imaginative and important ways to donate those funds. It all, of course, culminated at the extravaganza at the Royal Albert Hall. Afterwards, I received many messages of congratulations for the excellence of the event. I took them all in my stride and most certainly did not admit to having done precisely nothing myself, to the extent of not even knowing until it started what on earth was going to happen. My lack of such knowledge made the event even better. It was truly memorable and is still talked about. How lucky we are to have such talented brethren capable of putting on such a show. Throughout my time in office, I've enjoyed incredible support from so many. I have the same Deputy Grand Master throughout and could never have asked for better. I have to say that as he'll soon become my boss. David Williamson and Sir David Wootton, meanwhile, have been wonderful assistants. The board and its presidents and the secretariat have all played such an important part in making my life easy. But I'm going to be slightly indulgent and single out Graham Redman, who over the 27 years since I became GDC has always been the person I relied on to tell me if I was about to make a howler. He did, of course, revel in doing so, and I suspect has saved me from many calamities. Brethren, I shall finish by simply saying thank you all for your support and for putting up with my rather quirky sense of humour for so long.
On page 60, Learnings Online. Introducing Welcome Companion, the latest in a series of virtual learning modules on Solomon that help a Freemason's development. In July, the Solomon team launched a new module called Welcome Companion. This completes the suite of modules that are mainly intended for those who have just undertaken a ceremony, namely Welcome Apprentice, Welcome Fellowcraft, and Welcome Master Mason. These have proved very popular and may also be of interest to more experienced Freemasons. In case you are not familiar with it, Solomon is a virtual learning environment, VLE, that helps with the learning and development needs of members and companions. It can be found at solomon.ugle.org.uk. Its purpose is to complement the support that already exists in lodges and chapters, and is not intended to replace anything. Although the welcome modules can be taken in the comfort of your home at your own speed, this is not the only way they can be used. For example, you could also work on them as part of a discussion with a mentor. The welcome modules adopt gamification to make the learning experience more fun and engaging. When successfully completing each of the 12 quizzes on Welcome Companion, users earn a virtual badge. When they have completed all the quizzes, read all the relevant content, and watched all the videos, users can earn the Welcome Companion badge. This is a significant achievement, as it involves a lot of work. We are investigating a function that would allow users to download a certificate of achievement. Such certificates are increasingly becoming the norm at work and for other leisure time activities. Ritual and traditions vary in chapters, so this module is therefore based on the popular Aldersgate Royal Arch ritual. Though this may be different to your own chapter, the fundamentals are the same. You could consider it as visiting while noting the variations to your own chapter. Welcome Companion is broken down into 5 sections: background to the ceremony, ensigns and banners, chapter organization, the lectures, and the final quiz. The module therefore helps explain the historical and biblical context that forms the backdrop to the ceremony. The first presentation is a timeline of how Royal Arch is the continuation of the story started in Craft Freemasonry. The grand originals are explained and, following a video about the destruction of the First Temple, a summary of the exaltation ceremony is provided. Not all companions are aware of the relationship between the ensigns and banners, or how they fit in with the story of Exodus from the Bible. The second section therefore provides an explanation of which ensigns relate to which banner, and their position within the chapter room. This explanation enables new companions to connect more with their surroundings. Likewise, the third section concentrates on how the chapter itself is organized. This includes the layout of furniture, the biblical characters being represented, an explanation of the officers, the Royal Arch jewel, regalia, robes, and the scepters. For the fourth section, members are provided with an insight into the historical, symbolical, and mystical lectures. The module concludes with an explanation of the destruction of the Second Temple, while the final quiz entitles successful candidates to the Welcome Companion badge. It could be said that Freemasonry becomes more challenging after taking each step. We hope this new module will help companions better understand the context of the Royal Arch ceremony so they can enjoy this beautiful order. Our labour is then complete.
The Royal Arch section starts on page 66 and has one article. It's entitled Companions Unite, introducing the new Royal Arch Membership and Communications Working Party, a team set up to help develop the Royal Arch as it moves into its third century. These are exciting times for the Royal Arch, as increased focus is being given to communications as well as the narrative around it. A key cornerstone of our work around the Royal Arch is the new Pro Grand Master Jonathan Spence's determination that the craft and Royal Arch work in tandem with one and another. As you'll read in his article in the magazine, which was on page 40, he says the craft and Royal Arch need to work seamlessly together. We must get better at explaining why the Royal Arch enriches the craft experience of members, how valuable it is, and how it is the natural next stage after becoming a Master Mason. To achieve this, a new working party, The Membership and Communications Working Party, the MCWP, has been created under the guidance of the Committee of General Purposes to meet these challenges, with one question at the forefront of its thinking. How can we ensure the Royal Arch thrives in these challenging times? The team, and we'll just get on to them in a minute, the team provides support to the Committee of General Purposes on all matters relating to membership and communications. This is obviously a huge task, and so comprises a group of experienced Royal Arch Masons from across the Constitution, with additional support from the UGLE Deputy Director of Communications, Sean Butler. The team is currently working on four projects. First, how is the Royal Arch doing nationally in terms of its membership profile? Second, Archway, a Royal Arch equivalent of the Members Pathway. Third, the narrative about how the Royal Arch adds value to craft Freemasonry. And fourth, finally, enhancing our communication strategy across all the many available channels. It's been a busy start for the working party, with plenty of work already completed. This includes pulling data, surveying Freemasons who are not currently members of the Royal Arch and those who have recently joined, as well as connecting with Grand Superintendents throughout the Constitution. Right now, there's a lot of information available, and the team are letting the evidence lead the work. Progress so far is starting to show, with more Royal Arch content being shared across all existing channels to raise awareness. Work is also continuing on Archway, the Royal Arch equivalent of the Members Pathway, and a consistent narrative is being developed. Overall, the message is clear. There's now a real determination at all levels to promote the indissoluble link created more than 200 years ago between the craft and the Royal Arch, and to communicate the many ways in which the Order enriches our experience of craft masonry. You can help too. Speak to the Royal Arch representative in your lodge and share your views on what makes it so special. And now we have some mini-biographies of each of the members of the committee, starting with John Reed.
John Reed. A passionate Royal Arch companion of 31 years, John joined the chapter 2 years after being raised. An active member of the Wiltshire Executive for the past 16 years, he is now in his 8th year as Grand Superintendent and was more recently appointed Provincial Grand Master Designate for Wiltshire. John is currently a member of the Committee of General Purposes for the Royal Arch and a member of the UGLE Audit Committee, and he still finds time to take an active office in Rose Quay. He recently retired as a chartered construction manager, having worked on the Crown Estate for the past 47 years, and is interested in all things equestrian, as well as sports in general.
Elliot Chevin. Elliot Chevin is the Deputy Grand Superintendent in Essex. He was initiated nearly 25 years ago by his father. His late maternal grandfather was a Freemason, his sister has since joined Freemasonry, and he hopes his son might one day follow in their footsteps. Elliot lives in Essex with his wife and 2 children. He's a keen runner, guitarist and whisky enthusiast. Professionally, Elliot has worked for Apple Inc. for nearly 15 years.
Simon Daniel. A proud Welshman and Lewis from Swansea, Simon has been a Freemason since 2001 and is now Assistant to the Provincial Grand Principals, Provincial Grand Membership Officer for Craft and Royal Arch. He's also Joint Provincial Head of Learning and Development for Craft and Royal Arch and the Chair of the Masonic Grants Committee for the Masonic Benevolent Foundation of South Wales. He's also a member of 4 other orders. Simon works as a hotelier, running 2 spa hotels in Usk and Brecon Beacons, and is married with 3 children and 3 grandchildren. He's a keen vegetable gardener, avid England cricket fan, and, of course, Welsh rugby runs in his blood.
Paul Renton. Chairman of the Membership and Communication Working Party, Paul has been a Freemason since 1984 and a member of the Royal Arch Cabinet in the province of West Lancashire for the past 9 years. Paul is currently the Deputy Grand Superintendent and a member of 10 other orders. His professional life has been spent as an educator, first in secondary schools and then as a school advisor stroke inspector, and then working for the Rugby Football Union as a referee educator.
Sean Butler. Sean is the Deputy Director of Communications and Marketing at UGLE and Supreme Grand Chapter. He was initiated in 2015 and was exalted into the Royal Arch in 2018 in Letchworth Chapter, number 3505. Sean lives in Surrey with his family and his English bulldog, Winston, and is a lifelong supporter of Newcastle United and the England rugby team.
Mike Ricks. Born in a mining village in Yorkshire, Mike attended the local grammar school and is a graduate of Bradford and Nottingham Universities. He's been a company director for 30 or so years with different companies, including his own. Married with four children, he's lived with his family in Lincolnshire for 40 years. Mike was initiated into Hallcross Lodge No. 5744 in 1991 in Doncaster and has been master twice. Exalted into Isle of Axom Chapter in 1998, he became MEZ in 2011. He was appointed active provincial standard bearer and now has Supreme Grand Chapter Grand Rank as Past Assistant Grand Director of Ceremonies. Michael became provincial second Grand Principal in May 2019. There are four book reviews this time: The Scottish Workings of Craft Masonry, Practical Freemasonry, Accessible Philosophy for Working Class Schlubs, The Kirkwall Scroll, and Hiram's Way, Meditations on the Masonic Path to Enlightenment.
The first book review is for The Scottish Workings of Craft Masonry, and the review is by Stanhope. North of the Border: Spot the Differences and Similarities. This book is a reissue of the 1967 edition by Lewis Masonic, which was already a well-established work with some archaic layout and language. That is not by any means a complaint. Rather, it is a pleasing historical experience for all those who enjoy Masonic research. I have not yet had the pleasure of experiencing a Scottish lodge in action. However, it is something readers will keenly anticipate once they have finished reading this interesting book. Members of the English Constitution will doubtless look here for the differences in Freemasonry north of the border. They are easy to spot, but so are the deep similarities. The general scheme is the same, so too the progress through the degrees. However, the Scots have interesting abbreviated workings to be used alternatively. This is greatly attractive. They are pithy and dramatic, redolent of the Georgian origins of Freemasonry as we know it. Here also you will find the first tracing board prominent and obviously to be given at most initiations. This has effectively disappeared from English ceremonies. In 36 years, I have only heard it given once. Likewise, there are charges to the candidate after each degree, not merely the first. I won't spoil your enjoyment by setting it all out here. For not much more than the price of a coffee and newspaper, you can happily discover them all yourself. Aside from the ceremonies, there is an introduction that provides an interesting summary of the origins of Freemasonry. At the back of the book, you will find pages of quaint Masonic songs, toasts, and sentiments, such as "May our evening's diversion bear the morning's reflection," and "Golden eggs to every brother, and goldfinches to our lodgers." So mote it be.
And The Scottish Workings of Craft Masonry is published by Lewis Masonic, 174 pages, price £12. The second book is Practical Freemasonry, Accessible Philosophy for Working Class Schlubs. It's by Matt Gallagher, reviewed by Aubrey Buchanan. Straightforward solutions. Help is at hand for younger Freemasons. Just what should the tone of Freemasonry be like now? Should it lean towards the stuffy and pompous, as I still occasionally see in some lodges, or be more relaxed and in step with what people under 30 are like today? Perhaps there's room for both and all shades in between, which is saying something for an elderly fellow like me who can remember what some meetings were like many, many decades ago, where old fogies often predominated. This book, written by Matt Gallagher, a young Freemason based in Minnesota, US, is in the relaxed, up-to-date style and clearly geared towards younger Freemasons in the United States. It also uses a fair few Masonic terms that may be unfamiliar to Freemasons in the UK, but which a few moments' thought will make clear. Nonetheless, practical Freemasonry is not in any way less interesting for that. A straightforward read, it squarely tackles some of the issues that younger people these days can run into, whether they already belong to a lodge or are thinking of joining one. Gallagher is, moreover, good at explaining the more esoteric elements of Freemasonry in a modern but not inaccurate way. If you're stuffy and pompous, or wish that the clock could be turned back 80 years to well before World War II, then this book is not for you. But then, nor is this magazine. If you're not, then it is, in its way, very readable, and unquestionably contains much of depth and interest. Gallagher aims to show how Masonic ideas can be applied to life in a practical way that anyone can understand. But on a deep level, I think he succeeds. Worth buying. And Practical Freemasonry, Accessible Philosophy for Working Class Schlubs, is by Matt Gallagher, 212 pages, price £17.95.
The third review is for the Kirkwall Scroll, and the review is by Andrew Pippin. A fascinating object, an ancient piece of Scottish Masonic history. The Kirkwall Scroll is an extraordinary Masonic artefact. The linen roll measures more than 18 feet long and nearly 6 feet wide, and is decorated with a wide variety of Masonic symbols. How old it may be is still debated. Some people believe it dates right back to the Middle Ages, perhaps even as far back as 1307, when the Knights Templar were forced underground by Pope Clement V. Others more modestly believe it only dates from the 18th century. It is minuted that the original was given to the Scottish Lodge of Kirkwall Culwinning, No. 382, in the late 1700s. Different parts of the scroll have been carbon dated on separate occasions, giving rise to widely different dates. Both results are backed by scientific data, and both have staunch followers. Nor does there appear to be any right or wrong answer as to its intended narrative. A possible purpose, rather like today's tracing boards, was as a lecture aid, although the detailed interpretation of the imagery and symbolism seems to vary according to how old it is thought to be. The scroll itself contains 7 central panels mixing, among other things, creation, Masonic symbolism, the heavens, symbols relating to the Holy Royal Arch, and working tools. Side panels then depict what appears to be the journey of the Israelites from Egypt to the Holy Land. Due to its sheer size, one suggestion is that it could have been laid on the floor and the appropriate parts revealed depending on the subject of the lecture. The scroll is now available as a scaled-down, high-quality print, allowing it to be much more easily studied. You can come up with your own interpretation of the naive artwork, or simply enjoy what is undoubtedly an incredibly important piece of Scottish Masonic history.
And the Kirkwall Scroll, which isn't a book actually, it's a print of the original Kirkwall Scroll, is available from Lewis Masonic, priced £18. And lastly, the book, Hiram's Way, Meditations on the Masonic Path to Enlightenment, by John T. Marks, reviewed by Lionel Brough. Deep reflections, the deeper meanings of what we do. One of the many extraordinary things about Freemasonry is that despite being an often life-changing means of thinking about how we behave as individuals, it is definitely not a solitary activity, fraternizing, of course, being at the heart of what we do. The result is that one of Freemasonry's aims is that we should all steadily try to improve the way we behave towards our fellow creatures and quietly do our bit to make the world a better place. In this, the latest book in his Masonic Meditations series, John T. Marks once again offers his careful and deep reflections. This time he uses 100 short phrases or single words from the ceremonies and explores what they would mean to an ideal Master Mason. Two examples chosen, more or less at random, are to be happy ourselves and to communicate happiness, and the practice of every moral and social virtue. These phrases or words are then followed by short one-page meditations, each packed with food for thought. Two brief extracts, again chosen at random, will give an idea of these. Marx's ideal master mason understands that he does not need to trumpet his virtue to the world, and he realizes that often more can be accomplished by working in the background, quietly and steadily. Another is, he knows in his heart that a life lived without love, compassion and empathy is a life that has missed its purpose, and is ultimately a life without joy or direction. There are hundreds more. In his introduction, Marx points out that our rituals are full of hints and suggestions as to what it might mean to be truly a master mason. I found it thought-provoking and a most interesting read. And the book Hiram's Way, Meditations on the Masonic Path to Enlightenment by Jonty Marx is published by Lewis Masonic, 108 pages, priced £10.
On page 71. Community Spirit. An update from Masonic Charitable Foundation Chief Executive Les Hutchinson. It has been another busy year so far at the Masonic Charitable Foundation, as we have responded to a number of events and launched new projects and partnerships, as well as maintaining the smooth running of our operations under hybrid working arrangements. At the beginning of the year, we launched a fundraising appeal on behalf of Freemasonry to tackle the growing humanitarian and refugee situation in Ukraine. We reacted within days of the invasion with a grant of £50,000 to the British Red Cross. The MCF and UGLE then launched an appeal which reached £500,000 very quickly, and now stands at more than £1.1 million. Five major grants have already been made to leading aid agencies, and further such awards will follow. It has been incredible to see how much Freemasonry has stepped up in response to this crisis. In April, we welcomed our new president, Right Worshipful James Long, and said goodbye to Right Worshipful Richard Hone, who has served the MCF and previously the Freemasons Grand Charity for more than 19 years. We are incredibly grateful for the enormous contribution made by Richard over many years, and look forward to working closely with James. To further support charities across England and Wales, the MCF has launched a new strategic partnership with Cranfield Trust. Funded by a £228,000 grant, this will support smaller charities identified by provinces and Metropolitan Grand Lodge by providing pro bono management consultancy and mentoring. The partnership will also spearhead a major national study into the professional development and training needs of frontline charity managers. The MCF and Freemasonry have been long-standing cash donors for many charities and causes, but this new partnership will see Freemasonry funding practical help that will benefit the charities and their leaders for many years. At our summer trustee board meeting, we were pleased to welcome representatives of Age UK. They provided an update on the impact that our major grant of £1.2 million is having on older people across the country through our Later Life Goals initiative. It was reported that an astonishing 10,000 older people had received support, and the project also identified £18.74 million in hitherto unclaimed benefits for older people. That's an additional £4,000 of income on average for every person supported by the project. This extra money will be making all the difference as prices continue to rise. I'm very pleased that following the various lockdowns, festival activities are now back up and running. These include many innovative and, in some cases, daring fundraising events that have taken place over recent months, as well as the final appeal celebrations in Essex, Leicestershire and Rutland, Durham and Oxfordshire. We remain immensely grateful to all those who have done so much to support our work. It is much appreciated. This year, the MCF celebrates its sixth birthday. In just 72 months, we have awarded grants on behalf of Freemasonry amounting to more than £110 million, or £60,000 per day, comprising more than 18,000 grants to individuals in need and more than 3,700 grants to charities. This is only possible thanks to the generosity of Freemasons, their families and friends, who continue to enthusiastically support our work. In 2022, we will have come to the end of our first five-year strategy and have started to develop plans that will direct the MCF over the next few years. We look forward to consulting and discussing these proposals with key groups within Freemasonry as this process develops. As always, the MCF remains here to help with a range of financial, family, health and care needs. We are very much open for business. If you or someone you know might benefit from our support, please do not hesitate to contact us. Thanks for your ongoing support.
Page 72 has an article entitled Take 10. Freemason and Prestonian lecturer Tony Harvey celebrates a decade of delivery for Freemasonry, scouting and charity. Masonic Charitable Foundation MCF trustee Tony Harvey is celebrating a decade of delivering his 2012 Prestonian lecture, Scouting and Freemasonry, to parallel organisations. In addition to reaching this milestone, Tony has also raised more than £100,000 for charities since 2012 from his various Masonic books and talks. The annual Prestonian lecture is the only lecture held under the authority of UGLE as a memorial to William Preston, 1742-1818, the foremost Masonic educator of his age, who left a legacy to Grand Lodge to provide for an annual lectureship. Each year, the Board of General Purposes nominates lecturers to the trustees of the Prestonian Fund, who then make the appointment. Tony has now delivered his 2012 lecture on 132 occasions across London and all 47 provinces, as well as in five overseas districts. During the pandemic, technology stepped in to allow the lecture and Tony's other talks to continue, and he delivered these online to audiences around the world 141 times. The 2012 Prestonian lecture starts by outlining the many parallels between Scouting and Freemasonry as values-based membership organisations, as well as key differences. It then draws upon Tony's original research about Robert Baden-Powell and his links to the craft. Based on this foundation, the lecture continues with examples of how Scouting and Freemasonry are working together today and the potential for a mutually beneficial relationship between the two organisations. Tony's growing list of other talks on Freemasonry combine historical analysis with an understanding of the development of people and organisations to promote a forward-thinking approach to Freemasonry. They include his 2018 Cornwallis lecture, The Future of Freemasonry, Evolution and Change, and Seven Habits of Highly Successful Lodges. Tony has developed the latter into a book to be published this year by Lewis Masonic. In total, £102,575 has been raised from Tony's books and talks. This has been supplemented by Tony's personal fundraising activities, which have added a further £13,433, that is, including a rainy and rather windswept walk to the summit of the Old Man of Coniston in the Lake District on Tony's 60th birthday. Several charities within Freemasonry, including the MCF and its predecessor charities, and the Mark Benevolent Fund, have received a total of £76,871 over the past 10 years. £38,000 has gone to support Scouting, and especially its heritage work. It has funded the installation of a climate control system in the National Archives, the digitisation of the Baden-Powell Archive, and the first ever donation to the Scout Association's Heritage Centre at Gilwell Park, the Scouts' national headquarters, in Essex. Looking back on his decade of delivering the lecture, Tony says, "I'm very proud to belong to both Freemasonry and the Scouting movement, and I'm very grateful to have had the opportunity to visit so many places and meet so many people by delivering this lecture. It's now been 10 years, and I continue to receive many requests from lodges and other groups to deliver the lecture, as well as other talks. It's a privilege to be able to keep sharing my passion for the positive work of these two wonderful organisations, which have added so much to my life and the lives of so many others." To find out more, visit prestonian2010.org.uk.
On page 73, RMBI Care Company staff receive British Citizen Award in praise of efforts during the pandemic. The 180-year-old charity provides care and support to older Freemasons and their families. Care home managers at RMBI Care Company have received a British Citizen Corporate Award in recognition of their leadership during the COVID-19 pandemic. Furthermore, all staff members at the homes, which provide older people with residential care, nursing care and residential dementia support, have been awarded a British Citizen Award Certificate of Recognition for their exceptional endeavours in the workplace community. Regional, national and head office staff have also been awarded the same certificate. Mark Lloyd, Managing Director at RMBI Care Company, said, "Our care homes, head office and national teams have worked tirelessly to ensure that our residents have received exceptional care and remained safe." The 180-year-old charity provides care and support to older Freemasons, their families and people in the wider community across 18 care homes in England and Wales. Mark added, "I am delighted that our home managers have been personally recognised for their contribution, as they have demonstrated tremendous leadership and have all risen to the challenge and ensured their residents, their relatives and staff have been kept up to date with the ongoing, unprecedented and changing situation." Receiving the award, Beverly Roberts, home manager at Prince Michael of Kent Court in Watford, said, "It's a real honour to be recognised for the work that we do, as well as each of our staff members who go over and above every day to support the residents within our care. It has been a challenging few years, but we have emerged stronger and closer as a team." The British Citizen Awards help to recognise individuals doing extraordinary things in the local community. Anyone can be nominated for an award, providing they have had a meaningful impact on those around them.
MCF forges links with new partner. Cranfield Trust receives partnership grant to aid small charities. And this is on page 74. The Masonic Charitable Foundation, MCF, the Freemasons charity, has awarded Cranfield Trust a strategic partnership grant of £228,000, which will fund the crucial management support of 60 small charities. This grant from the MCF on behalf of Freemasons will help provide essential social welfare services to the people who need them at this most challenging time. Smaller charities will benefit from intensive consultancy or leadership development support in areas such as business planning and strategy, governance, marketing or financial processes. Amanda Tinknell, CBE, Chief Executive of Cranfield Trust, said, "We are delighted to be working with the Masonic Charitable Foundation to support vital frontline charities across this country. The generous grant will enable Cranfield Trust to link highly skilled volunteers with frontline welfare charities and organisations to provide essential consultancy and mentoring services. This partnership will provide tailored professional support to meet the needs of smaller charities, and as a result, local communities will benefit from even better charity services. 60 small charities and other not-for-profit organisations from across England and Wales will be able to access essential training and expert help from Cranfield Trust. At least one charity will be nominated by the Metropolitan Grand Lodge and every province across England and Wales to receive intensive support, while 12 more will be nominated by MCF's very own charity grants team. The partnership will also include a programme of learning events and activities to thousands of other charities. Drawing on Cranfield Trust's model of skilled volunteering, charity leaders and managers will benefit from the support of exceptional consultants and mentors. The partnership will also spearhead a major national study into the professional development and training needs of frontline charity managers to build a management training program for thousands more local charities in the future. This important partnership with Cranfield Trust will help 60 small charities to become more effective and improve the delivery of services to people in need. It's another demonstration of charity being at the heart of Freemasonry," said Les Hutchinson, the Chief Executive of MCF. And that completes our reading of this edition of FMT Freemasonry Today magazine, the official journal of the United Grand Lodge of England. This has been issue number 59 for autumn 2022. Thank you for listening.